This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage, on 620 CKRM.
And a good Wednesday afternoon, Saskatchewan. This is the affordable trailer sales edition of The Sports Cage. The Sailabration is on now at their South Service Road location. Save thousands on the RV of your dreams at Affordable Trailer Sales in Regina. Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco in the cage with you today. Coming up on this edition of the program, the Western Hockey League's all-time current leading scorer, Jagr Furkus. He has a little bit of work to do if he wants to be the all-time leading scorer. He will join us, as well as Mike Abumeshrek will be in studio.
Abu.
Be exciting to see him. Haven't seen him in a while. It's been in the cage in some time. I know he's all jacked up to come see us in studio.
I'm going to be the second coolest ex-Western Mustang in the studio. Great.
It's a short list. Farhan Lalji will also join us. I'm curious to hear about what this New England Patriots signing of Jacoby Brissett means for Nathan Rourke.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of pushes his prospects down even a little bit further. Leo McDonald, we never get enough Leo Mack on the airwaves.
That's true.
About his golf show and the Regina Red Sox impending season.
Hope he's over his shyness.
And where are they now for Floor Coverings International? All that and more ahead on this edition of the program. You can chime in through the Capital Ford Lincoln text line at 306-936-6262 or call us toll-free at 1-866-767-0620. Follow us on social media at SportsCage, the handle, whether you're on Twitter or on Facebook. But right now, we go out onto the Western Pizza Hotline, and we are joined by a committee member for Kraft Hockeyville Wolseley. Vance Weber joins us now. Vance, welcome to the Sports Cage.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
What was the motivation behind entering Wolseley into this competition?
Without a doubt, the biggest motivation we have is we need to upgrade our ice plant. We are on year 44 of a 25-year design. We basically doubled the lifespan of the existing plant just through care and dedication. But you know what? Sometimes you got to replace stuff too. And she's basically wore out, and that's what we need to do. And winning Kraft Hockeyville for Wolseley really would help us accomplish that goal.
That's the biggest thing on these arenas, isn't it? And it's not just a problem in Wolseley. It's a problem all over. It's a problem here in Regina at the Brandt Center. The ice plant there has well outlived its useful life cycle. And if you have that, you're cooking with grease. If you don't have that, you just don't have an arena. Simple as that, isn't it?
Basically, you know, like you got a concrete parking lot, right? Really nice, smooth one, too. on the bright side, though, once we replace this, we actually have the opportunity to upgrade it to a more environmentally friendly one. So, you know, lower greenhouse gas emissions, and even better for me, in my opinion, lower utility bills. So it's cheaper for the taxpayers as well. Lots of wins going on, especially if we win Kraft Hockeyville.
Hey, Vance, it's Pete. Long time, no talk.
At least 24 hours. Well, yeah. Maybe not quite.
Well, that leads me to my next question. You've become a media darling, I guess, since the announcement came out of Wolseley making the Final Four. How many of these interviews have you done now? Are you keeping track?
You know what? I actually haven't counted, but I am currently looking at over a page worth. Well, I guess that's done and also scheduled for the future. It's I feel very special. More importantly, though, it's really good getting the name of Wolseley out there. We've got big plans for this town, and getting this kind of coverage, it's not just about the ice plant. It's going to help attract more business to this community and really make it thrive, help make it thrive. Kraft Hockeyville is such a great vehicle, and it'll be really great to win it for Saskatchewan.
So what about the community? What's the buzz been like in Wolseley and I guess neighboring communities as well since the announcement came?
You know what? We've got in Wolseley, we've gotten amazing feedback. You used to actually have to ask people to help on occasion, right? People like to help in a small community, but you got to ask them. Well, people are coming to you and saying, how can we help? I'd be willing to bet that like we're probably at least at 20% of the population is pitched in at some level, and it's going to grow from there. Also catching a lot of help from outside communities. Like we've got Grenfell, Indian Head, Momart. Yeah, you know what? There's a whole bunch I'm missing, so I'm not going to start naming them. But like all the surrounding communities have helped out. We've gotten Pence, former Hockeyville, Lumsden, former Hockeyville, Assiniboia, Ituna. There's so many former Hockeyvilles that are offering to help. It's amazing.
Well, Sports Gauge listeners want to help. Darn it, he said, slapping the table. So how can we? How do we vote and when do we vote?
Well, you know, the way to vote for us is first you got to register. So you go to Google Craft Hockeyville Wolseley, and then you sign up. So once you're signed up, you're allowed to vote. You have till the 28th, I believe, to register. Then on starting at 7 a.m. on March 29th, you grab yourself a cup of coffee and you start voting. And you vote over and over and over again through that website. And all the way up until 3 p.m. on March 30th. And then eventually we get to hear that Wolseley wins for Saskatchewan.
So have any of the locals discussed what teams they would like to see play in this hypothetical preseason game at the Wolseley Arena?
You know what? Yeah, there has been a lot. We believe it or not, we've got family roots with the Habs through Jean Beliveau. We've got some of his cousins' families are all here, which is pretty cool, right? However, as a good Saskatchewan boy who's followed the Pats for a while, I'd love to see Eberle and Bedard. Like, bring the boys home for an NHL game at the Brandt Center. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Would be pretty cool, for sure. Yes, I see here that if you are successful in this venture, you would win the $250,000 that would be put toward arena upgrades. Now, we've talked about the ice plant. Would that pretty much eat it up, or is there some other work that you could do to the building, too, with that?
There is other work that we need to get done for the building. We have been raising money for the ice plant for slightly over a year, and we are over $100,000. So with this $250,000, we're slightly over $350,000. We're still not quite there for the ice plant. So we're going to obviously be asking for more help, doing more fundraising. And we are using this opportunity to broaden our outreach, which is awesome. But even once the ice plant's in, we got to upgrade the women's washroom. We got about a $15,000 bill there. And some of our seating, we borrowed, I guess you could say, when Indian Head Theater upgraded theirs. They asked if anybody wanted their old seating, and we gladly took it. And now after 10-odd or 15-odd years that it's been here, it's really well used, we could say. And we need to upgrade that as well.
I think it's probably fair to say that anyone who spent more than 5 minutes in small-town Saskatchewan, and Wolseley or anywhere, realizes the importance of a rink to the local community. It's literally the lifeblood of the community, I would suggest, between October and April. Is that fair to say for Wolseley as well?
Oh, yeah, it honestly is. Like, you know, when you are just kind of sick of dealing with the weather, on some of those days, you go down, grab a coffee, burger, talk to some of your buddies, and watch the kids play hockey. That's a lot of fun. You know what? Another thing that I haven't talked about with anybody else, I actually like working in our booth, flipping those burgers and giving out the coffees. It's a real social community event. Working in a booth and supporting your community, I think it's part of what makes Saskatchewan special.
I never even thought to ask this until you just mentioned that. So how does Wolseley's Rink Burger compare to some of the others around the province?
I like to think we got a pretty solid one, but I'll tell you one thing. We've got great fries. Our French fries, people come and they eat them. We go through a lot every day.
Only if Vance is cooking them, right?
You know, I prefer the ones that other people cook, but I mean, if other people like mine, that's fine too.
Good show. I see here, I think the voting is all in a tight window. Am I reading this right? Voting opens on March 29th at 9 a.m., so that would be 7 a.m. our time, and it closes at 3 p.m. the very next day, March 29th and 30th?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
It's all in a tight window. Okay.
Super tight.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
And there's no limit on how many times a person can vote, is there?
Well, you know, I'm convinced that we should actually start having people compete to see how many votes they can get in, because there is no upper limit. If you're ambidextrous, grab two phones and away you go.
And if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And you know the other guys are doing it too. So
100%. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Fight fire with
fire.
That's
pretty sketchy in Elliott Lake. I'm sure of it.
I'm not going to talk about anybody else's ethics, but I do know that Saskatchewan's got a great spirit, and I think they can bring Kraft Hockeyville home this year.
Vance Weber from Kraft Hockeyville Wolseley, we wish you all the best, and we look forward to celebrating a victory with you at the end of March.
Thank you, gentlemen. I look forward to talking to you after the victory occurs as well. Bye for now.
Very good. Vance Weber from the Kraft Hockeyville Wolseley Committee. And, well, it's a big month for the community of Wolseley to try and win $250,000 and land a preseason game. What two teams would you want to see, Pete, in some small town around?
If I could pick.
If you're going to drive out to Wolseley, what teams do you want to see?
Leafs and Habs.
Don't think you're going to get that, but.
It's what I want.
It would make sense if they want to add a little extra juice, right? To give
that
an
would
actual
be big.
Primetime matchup.
But I don't mind Vance's idea either, Bedard versus Eberle. Yeah, I'd be in for that.
Do you know John Beliveau had family in Wolseley?
I did not. That's very interesting.
I never would have guessed that in 100 million years. I've never heard of any connection that John Beliveau had out here. I know the Pats have a longstanding connection to the Montreal Canadiens.
Yes.
That's the reason why their trim is it's the same colors, just backwards. Mm-hmm. There's more blue than red, but that's why the Pats are the oldest franchise in Canada. Did you know that the... Weyburn Red Wings were once upon a time the farm team of the...
Detroit Red Wings.
And the Estevan Bruins were the farm team of the...
That team in Boston. Shall not speak its name.
Well, the old arena down in Estevan, the rink was... The ice surface was really, really small.
Hmm.
And the reason for that is because the Boston Bruin management wanted it that way so that they learned how to play on the Boston Garden that had the little ice surface.
All right.
Now you know...
The rest of the story.
We'll be back with more of the Sports Cage. Still ahead, Mike Abumeshrek in studio. You're listening to the Almighty 620 CKRM.
Nobody covers your team like our team. This is the Sports Cage on the Mighty 620 CKRM.
Wednesday's Sports Cage is brought to you by Affordable Trailer Sales.
The Sailebration is on now at their South Service Road location. Save thousands on the RV of your dreams at Affordable Trailer Sales in Regina. Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on this edition of the program. Still ahead in this hour, we will check in with the Western Hockey League's leading scorer, Jagr Furkus from the Moose Jaw Warriors. What a year he's having, 111 points.
That young man can definitely play. Big things were expected of him when he came into the Western Hockey League. And, you know, so often that doesn't pan out, but I would say it has for him.
I know you always get your grubby little paws into all the different sports, not all just the hockey.
Yep.
Are you going to drive to Moose Jaw, other places to see playoff hockey? Seems like everywhere.
I guess a guy has to, doesn't he?
There's a lot of exciting WHL playoff hockey everywhere but Regina.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're online, and I don't even know what a certain... community broadcasting outlet, okay, Access is doing. Maybe they're picking up some games in Moose Jaw. They probably should. I think they did that a couple years back.
I think if you're looking for stuff to cover, you would have to open your mind up to do some of that.
Mm-hmm. And SJHL too.
I'm just really excited to see that the teams around here are doing well.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen a provincial team win the Memorial Cup since 89. And before that, it was Prince Albert in 85, 4 years before that. So it's been a bit of a drought.
Yeah.
Prince Albert hasn't won a league title Swift Current did it.
Mm-hmm.
It was Swift Current and Prince Albert. They were in, consecutive years where they won the league championship. But I just think it's better when teams around here are doing well. See, I grew up in a small town where we had senior hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And my hometown team, the Kipling Royals, they won championships, you know, 93, 96, 99. And I just remember discovering what it was like to have the rink still going well into the spring and the rink packed and the snow melting. Mm. And there's just nothing nicer on earth than living through that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
It's like a Tuesday night. You're going to the rink. A game happens. It goes to overtime. You're shocked with the outcome one way or the other. Your team wins. All of a sudden, people want to go to the bar on a Tuesday night. And that's something that can't happen every night. It can't happen every week. But for a short time, every few years, there's nothing better than that. There's no other sport that really offers that, in my view.
No. I mean, my birthday is at the end of May. So, folks, you got time. Don't worry about it. But the Memorial Cup in 2001 was held here. And the final was held on my birthday. And people all thought, well, that's so cool. You probably went out and... Are you kidding? I did public address all week. I went home and had a nap.
Oh, did you do the PA announcing at the Memorial Cup?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Me and a French gentleman.
And how did you pass the test? Like, there's heavy screening from Hockey Canada. Not in this case. I've been around some of these national tournaments, and they don't just put anybody in the chair to do those.
It was basically, hey, Pats, who's your public address guy? Pete. Is he any good? Yep. Will he embarrass us on national television? Nope. Good enough for us.
I think I remember your voice again. I didn't know you were the regular guy, though. How long did you do that at the
Pats? Couple of years. I had my son was very young at that time, and I couldn't make a commitment for every game when he was 2 years old. So, yeah, did it for a couple of years.
That's pretty cool.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
That's something to go on the bucket list. That team, when I think about that 2001 Pats team, we're talking about the right one.
Yes.
Because we've had three Memorial Cups now in the city. Mm-hmm. And I remember they made all those trades at the deadline, and a lot of people criticized the management for giving up so much in the long run, and that's probably true. And even though the team did not get to their intended destination, they played a hell of a tournament.
Oh, they did. When the Pats tied up the semifinal game with about a minute or so left.
Against Val-d'Or, I was there.
Yes. That place was the loudest I've ever heard the brand.
And that was when they still had sound problems in that building. Like, it was hard getting a decent atmosphere. Remember, everybody complained that it was very sterile. But in that moment, it was not sterile.
No, not a bit. It was nuts. And then, of course, heartbreak shortly after when Val-d'Or scored in overtime. The one thing Pats fans, I think still to this day, wish is that maybe they had gone a different route with the goaltending. Donald Chickalis, pretty solid in the regular season, but just didn't have it when the Memorial Cup rolled around.
I think if they were better prepared for that season, that would have been their focus at the trade deadline. But I think that because they had so many other issues, they just couldn't focus in on that. If that team had been better prepared, a year or two better prepared for that Memorial Cup, I think you would have seen that. Because in the playoffs, he struggled.
Yeah, he did.
And then
they lost in the first round.
They did to Calgary. And it was a great series, amazing series, six-game series. But then they played in that tournament. And I think he struggled in the Memorial Cup. Is that when they made the switch to Davidson?
Yes, he was replaced.
Chad Davidson, yeah.
And Chad Davidson did really well. Yeah. He hung in there.
Funny how certain events stick out in your head more than others. And sometimes it's not for any particular reason. You know, the Pats at the more recent Memorial Cup probably had a better shot at it. Like, they got all the way to the final.
Yep.
But that one really sticks out in my mind. I don't know why. It just, I felt like that team was right there. And the fact that they fought so hard in that semifinal game, they were the only team in that tournament to beat Red Deer. Yeah.
Who ended up winning. Yep.
Yeah. Who went on to win the whole thing. And that was the only national championship.
Regina Dude scored the winning goal for Red Deer. Jeff Smith.
Right. Joel Stepp was part of it, but I think the goal went to Smith. Isn't there still some debate today who really touched the puck last? I'm not sure.
Oh, probably.
But in all the years that the Sutters have run the Red Deer Rebels, that's their only Memorial Cup championship.
Imagine.
And came here, and the Pats could have, would have, should have. Would have been nice to spoil the party.
Oh, yeah.
You can chime in on the discussion on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line, 306-936-6262. Call us toll-free at 1-866-767-0620. Follow us on social media, Twitter or Facebook, at SportsCage is the handle. Saw Cody Glidden today. I was down at SARM. He was up emceeing and doing stuff.
Cody.
He's just everywhere.
He really is. He actually is.
The March Madness thing. Do you get into that?
Yeah, actually. I used to follow NCAA basketball throughout the season, but, you know, you get older, you get other priorities. But when March Madness rolls around, yeah, I try to make some time and watch at least a few games.
Do you fill out a bracket? Do you do one of those ESPN brackets?
Nah, I don't follow it closely enough to feel that I'd have a shot of winning. I'd be one of those, well, what's their jersey color? Okay, good enough for me.
I think the key to win those brackets, not that I've ever pulled it off myself, I think it's to find a wild card.
Yeah.
And somebody who is not expected to go that far, but could be a contender, like somebody who's expected to maybe be top eight, and just pick a random team that's maybe supposed to finish between, I don't know, 8 and 16th in the entire tournament, and hope that they win. Because the problem is, if you take a top team like a Kentucky, or I don't even know who the good teams are this year, that shows how much attention I paid to U.S. college basketball. The problem is, if you pick them, a lot of other people are going to pick them.
True.
You need to find some wild card that is either going to win the whole thing or go really far, like get to the semifinal. Because if it happens, you're golden. Because you're pretty much assured that nobody else in your pool has not picked that person. Question on the text line, and this came from Don. Is that who it's from? Okay, Don Gardner. Okay. Why is Fran Huck's jersey not hanging from the rafters of the Brandt? Check his stats. That's a good question. Huh. I know when Ron Robison, the now former WHL commissioner, was asked who his favorite Pat of all time was, and he said Fran Huck. And I've heard his name come up a lot. He had great numbers.
Yes.
And sometimes names just fall through the cracks. Sometimes when teams retire numbers, they do it for somebody who's current so that it draws out a bigger crowd.
Yeah.
I think that that would still be a pretty cool ceremony. I remember watching, you would know this, you're a Leaf fan, the Leafs were playing a game at Madison Square Garden against the there's an idiot outside who just grabbed my attention. I was distracted.
No, that's never happened.
But the Leafs were playing the Rangers, and I think it was Bathgate. Andy Bathgate was getting his jersey retired. And by this point, Andy Bathgate was almost 80 years old.
Oof.
And nobody had ever heard of him, at least the younger crowd. Mm-hmm. And Brad May was out watching this whole ceremony, and he said, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen pregame. I agree. I agree with you, Don. I think they should retire Fran Huck's jersey, and none of us live forever. So sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Time to break. Still ahead in this hour, Jagger Furkus, the WHL's leading scorer. You're listening to the Sports Cage on the almighty 620 CKRM.
Where Saskatchewan sports fans come to talk. This is the Sports Cage on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on this Wednesday edition of the program. Still ahead, Mike Abumeshrek's going to join us in studio, in this Century studio, the beautiful glass view.
Where are we going to put him? He's a big guy. Yeah, this is a pretty
Hadn't really thought
studio.
That far ahead. Yeah.
Nah, he'll be fine.
And also, a big treat coming up for Flora Coverings International. Where are they now? One of my favorite broadcasters at a young age, Jeff Currier, was the voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders from 1987 through 1997, will join us. Did you ever work with Jeff?
I sure did. He was, he was still here when I arrived. That would have been 93. So, yeah, we worked together for a few years.
You worked with a lot of local famous people when you were on the Rider broadcast crew. You did the pregame show for a while, didn't you?
I sure did.
Pre-game show, post-game show?
I filled in on the post-game. That was not a duty I wanted full-time. Especially not with those Rider teams. They weren't very good.
Were there a lot of people inebriated who would call in on the post-game? I think there were.
Highly inebriated. Yeah. I remember once. Do you remember Bart Hull?
Yeah. That's Brett's brother. Yeah, played on the Riders and played a little bit for Ottawa. Yeah.
He was injured. And the Riders played somewhere in the States that night, and those games weren't televised, so we had no idea what the game actually looked like.
Very few games back then were televised, yeah.
And so for whatever reason, they sent Bart Hull over to hang out with me on the post-game show, and I appreciated having someone there. One of the first callers, I won't do the inebriated voice thing, but you guys can probably figure that out. He just went, I think Bart Hull is the best looking player in the CFL. I said, okay, cool. So we said goodbye to him. And I looked at Bart like, eh? And he went, that's my roommate. Cool.
He didn't get the athletic genes in the family.
Not so
much.
I think
that's fair to say.
Charismatic fellow, but yeah, no.
Fullback, I think.
Yeah, I believe so.
It would have been a much cooler story if Brett came to Regina to watch him play.
Yeah. I didn't have that kind of luck.
Did you ever meet Bobby Hull?
Yes. What was the event? It was one of his ranching/farming enterprises, and he was here at the Brandt Center and hanging around and stuck a microphone in his face and had a nice little chat.
He came around to all the small towns. He was always making the rounds, and he was great. He was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And he was probably one of those veterans who, retired veterans, I should say, who was looking for cash.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Sure.
And he did a really nice job. But I've done some reading, and I guess Bart and Bobby were very much estranged.
Oh, didn't know that.
And I know that Brett had his own issues with Bobby. I think they eventually reconciled. I know when I read the Brian Burke book, he was an agent for Brett Hull at a very young age when Brett was like going into college. Mm. And typical Brian Burke fashion, he said, I want to meet Brett because I might not like Brett, when they said he'll want to meet you to decide if he wants you to be his agent. Mm. And he said it was great, but he dealt mostly with Brett's mother. Mm. He very rarely had any encounter with, I was going to call him Mr. Hockey. Bobby Hull was never Mr. Hockey. Gordie Howe was Mr. Hockey. But so that
Bobby
was
Hull was the guy you did not want to get in front of his slap shot.
For Bobby Hull, yeah. No. They had him on the
Speaking
radar
of
gun.
Which, Rob Van Stone's book, the one about the massless goalies.
Have you finished it?
Yes. Spend some time talking about Bobby Hull and how goalies were terrified of his slap shot. Because they didn't wear masks, so they stood in front of it.
And that's largely why the games got so boring later on, because the goaltenders felt invincible, whereas they didn't. So we don't want to go back to goaltenders having to fear for their lives.
No.
But that's why we had to make the serious adjustment with the equipment.
Garth Snow wearing 55,000 pounds of padding wasn't good either.
RoboCop.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was good in spurts. Mm-hmm. But do you think we're back to that? Do you think the games, like when you turn on the TV, are you excited to watch an NHL game again?
More than I've been for a while, I have to admit. Yeah, the game has opened up a little bit. They're emphasizing or trying to speed and skill. And that's made it a much more enjoyable, much more watchable product. Now, having said that, I watched hockey in the 70s when they were beating the living, you know what, out of each other. For a kid in the 70s, that was pretty cool, too.
Was that the best era? Don Cherry always says it was. And look, I take everything Don Cherry says as fact.
I thought the 80s and 90s were, because you had that mixture of toughness and skill. And, well, you had Gretzky. You had Brett Hull. That was some pretty good hockey to me.
For me, Gretzky, because I didn't start watching till the 90s, Gretzky was overhyped. Because by the time he got to Los Angeles, he was not the same player. So actually seeing somebody do it at their top of their game was Lemieux.
Mm.
He was the greatest player on earth at that time.
If he had stayed healthy, would he be number one in the overall points parade? Would he have beaten out Gretzky?
I wouldn't doubt it. I know in Gretzky's first book that he wrote right after he went to Los Angeles, he said Super Mario might break all my records. And it might have happened if he had stayed healthy, but woulda, coulda, shoulda. Okay. Well, right now, let's go out onto the Western Pizza Hotline. Our next guest is the Western Hockey League's leading scorer and in line for what many hope will be a lengthy playoff run for the Moose Jaw Warriors. Jagr Furkus, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me very much.
So this scoring title, I know you're not about individual things and it's all about the team, but hey, you're allowed to say that this is something you want. So I'll ask you, is this something you really want?
Yeah, 100% it is. I mean, like you said, it's about the team wins the man, but at the same time, individual success is important as well. And especially the guys that put expectations on me, like Seattle, they this is a gold mine, and hopefully I can keep it up here throughout the last couple of games this season and get that.
When we look at the different possibilities for playoff matchups in the first round, who are you thinking about the most? Who you think you would match up the best with?
Yeah, there's obviously quite a bit of teams that we can play right now. It's not really set in stone yet. So, I mean, looking forward into the first round, it's really whoever we get placed against. No matter who we play, it's going to be the same. I guess same game style that we play throughout the playoffs, and it doesn't really matter to us. I mean, there's certain teams that play a bit harder and that play a bit more physical, but it's going to be playoff hockey, so they're going to be playing pretty hard either way.
Jagr, what'd you think around the time of the trade deadline? You obviously weren't going anywhere, nothing to worry about there, but when you saw the other teams in the East loading up, did you think, oh, playoffs are going to be interesting this year?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, trade deadline in the Western Hockey League, it's a pretty big deal every year, especially as of recently. There's been some really big moves at that time of the year. And I think going into that, we were obviously out in Sweden with a couple of guys, and we were kind of hoping we were going to get Savoy. And now that we got him, I mean, he's fit in perfectly with our team. And he's obviously had a lot of playoff experience playing with Winnipeg for the last couple of years.
I paid a lot of attention to Denton Mateychuk over the years, very offensive defenseman, and it seems like if a team's going to play not only successful but exciting hockey, they have to have a really offensive defenseman. Is he as important as anybody on your roster just because he's able to add that dimension from the back end?
Yeah, 100%. He's the backbone of our team. He's obviously our captain. I think the way he plays the game is a very exciting way. He's a very offensive man that can make plays and make things happen, and not a lot of people can do that from the back end, and he's one of those players that are just every single night you're going to get the same thing from him, and he's a great teammate as well. He's obviously there's a reason he's our captain.
So as you said, you're a draft pick of the Seattle Kraken. So what's your mindset? Are you going into the playoffs going, this is maybe my last kick of the can here in the Western League?
Yeah, it's in the back of my mind. Yeah, it could be my last year junior hockey, so I have to enjoy every moment of it. I think obviously there's lots of paths ahead of me right now, so it's exciting time, but at the same time, I want to make sure that if it is my last year, that I go out on the winning note.
Do you find that you're catching yourself paying more attention to what the Seattle Kraken are doing just because that's the team that owns your rights and you're probably going to be in their organization sooner rather than later?
Yeah, it's 100%. I mean, they're obviously a new team, so you didn't know a whole lot about them when I got drafted there. But now that I've been there, I've been a fan ever since. I mean, going to camp with certain guys, I mean, you also know a lot of the prospects that got called up and get to play in those games. You know them pretty well throughout camps. You've been with them, and I've lived with a couple of them as well. So you're just hoping for the best. And, I mean, they're in a tight race right now, so they're trying to get in there.
Of course, fans around here will be very familiar with one member of the Seattle Kraken in particular. Jordan Eberle just celebrated his 1,000th game in the NHL. Have you even allowed yourself to think about what that might feel like, playing that many games in the big league, or are you just sort of taking it one game, one season at a time?
I think for sure it's one game at a season at a time. I think, it's incredible. Guys that got 1,000 games in the NHL, every player that gets one should be happy, but if you get 1,000, I mean, that's just a great career, and it shows. I mean, you have to be a great teammate to get that many games under your belt in the NHL. You have to be a great player, and I think he's obviously both of those.
So what about you in terms of when you make the ascension to the next level? What do you bring to an NHL team that they need, that they want?
I think I bring goal scoring. I bring offensive talent. I like playing the power play as well. That's kind of where I think I feel the best out there. And I mean, there's plenty of opportunities that I want to get put in throughout my career, but I mean, I just got to take it one step at a time and try to work towards it.
You guys have a lot of star players. We talked about Denton Mateychuk and Matthew Savoy, who you picked up at the trade deadline, and some other pretty good players as well. Do you ever look around the locker room and just kind of wonder in your mind, okay, this guy's going to have a great career in the NHL. This guy's going someplace. Not sure about that guy. Does that ever run through your mind at all, projecting who will end up where without naming any names necessarily?
I mean, not really. I think they're your teammates. You don't really think about them in that way. I think obviously on the ice, sometimes you can, in practice especially, you realize guys like Denton and Tkachuk and Savoy, they just work their bag off in practice, and it shows why that at the level they play at right now. And I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't really think about that. I mean, there is some ideas in the back of my mind that I think people will be playing certain places, but nothing really.
Does it, I know the rivalry hasn't been much lately between Regina and Moose Jaw, but when it's at its best, it's one of the best rivalries probably in Western Canada. Doesn't it just break your heart that there's not going to be a playoff matchup with the Pats? Come on.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, from James Gow, I've heard plenty of stories of when they played in the Civic Center here and how rowdy you'd get and how exciting everyone was. But, I mean, I am honestly, that does make me a bit sad because I've heard about how exciting and how fun that rivalry is. Same time, I've got experience with Bedard there last year who brought in quite the fan base every night. So, I mean, I got a little portion of it.
Yeah, you're probably broken up to see him move on. I know everyone in the league wasn't a Regina Pats fan. Let's talk about the fan support. What's the community been like? Are they really on board this year and thinking this might be a team that could go all the way?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the excitement around the whole city of Moose Jaw is really cool. I mean, I've been here for 3 or 4 years now, and this year it's had some kind of special feeling going around it. So going to playoff time, and always going to be some really good crowd there, and they'll be getting loud for us, and hopefully we can do what we need to do.
I feel like if I was a junior hockey player, I feel like somewhere like Moose Jaw or even Swift Current would be the best places to be because
you're the show.
Yep. It is their NHL. I feel like if you played in Calgary or Edmonton, I'm not saying you wouldn't get noticed and that wouldn't be great too, or even in Regina, but I feel like it would be way more fun in a place like Moose Jaw. What do you think, Jagger?
Yeah, 100%. I get this question quite a bit, actually, just because there's not a lot to do in Moose Jaw. So I think that is the reason why you get to kind of, you get to be, I guess, the starlight, I guess, a lot of the weekends. I mean, what else can you do except go for a Warrior game? That's kind of been our rule the last couple of years, is try to bring the fans as exciting as we can get. And playing in Moose Jaw, I love it here in Moose Jaw. It's the second home to me now. I've been here for so long, and every person I've met here has been great to me. So I think even moving on, I'll make sure I keep this place in my heart.
Now, actually, I hope your answer for this next question changes in a couple of months because you're playing deep into the playoffs and maybe the Mem Cup. But to this point, what's been your I guess, highlight as a Moose Jaw Warrior? What's been the most memorable moment?
There's, for me, like personally or for team-wise?
Oh, for you, yeah.
I would say last year, game one against Lethbridge Hurricanes, I scored a double overtime winner in playoffs, and that was really exciting. I mean, it really set the tone going into the rest of the playoffs that year, and even getting game one is obviously a big game to win.
That's a pretty cool memory.
I
don't think too many athletes get to have one of those, so that's good that you're...
Yeah, it was pretty special.
You know, we see the cycle so often in junior hockey where if a guy plays for 4 years, he plays for multiple different teams. So I'm glad that it looks like your entire junior career is going to be in one stop. I think there's something great about that. Let's talk a bit about your general manager, Jason Ripplinger, and head coach, Mark O'Leary. Some of our listeners probably have some familiarity with Ripplinger, or Regina guy. Tell us a little bit about Mark O'Leary. I know he came from down east through that Alan Miller connection. What's he like as a head coach?
Yeah, he's a great coach. He's a guy that has a super open door policy, so whenever you need to talk to him or need to ask a question, you're comfortable to go in there and talk to him, which is a really important thing as a coach to have that detail, I guess. And I mean, yeah, I've had him for the last couple of years, so I'm super comfortable with him. I enjoy how he, I guess, supports me and makes me work hard. I appreciate every step of it.
Well, I know a lot of some of our listeners are not Warrior fans because of the old Regina Moose Jaw rivalry, but I know a lot of those people still want to see playoff hockey somewhere, and I know a lot of them will be making the trip down the highway to Moose Jaw. It seems like everybody in Saskatchewan is getting in on this playoff fun except Regina this year. So thanks for doing this, and good luck the rest of the way. Hopefully your career as a Moose Jaw Warrior lasts for another, well, couple of months, depending on how long your playoff run is.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it a lot, guys.
That is Jagger Furkus, the WHL's leading scorer with 111 points.
Heck of a player.
And all
I wonder,
guests.
Would Regina fans cheer for Moose Jaw? I think if it was probably between not. Moose Jaw and Saskatoon, we'd probably go Moose Jaw.
You think you would, eh?
I think so. Proximity, Blades have knocked the Pats out of the playoffs a couple times. Yep, I cheer for Moose Jaw.
I don't know. I think, but you know what? I think a lot of people would want Moose Jaw to have a run so that they can go down and see some games. And that's a great building. Mm-hmm. I love watching games in that building.
Yeah, it's really nice.
It doesn't have the rocking atmosphere the old Crush can, but it doesn't have that moldy smell either. So
it's all a trade-off.
Coming up in hour two, we will check in with Mike Abou-Meshrek, who will join us in studio. You're listening to The Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Our house is your house. Welcome inside the Sports Cage on Saskatchewan Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Mike McEwen will be on the Sports Cage on Friday, just giving some time to let the dust settle, see what's next for him and his curling crew out of Saskatchewan. Also, we'll be down at the Brandt Center before the Pats game on Friday, and the great Dennis Sobchuk is due to join us by phone. Have you met Dennis before,
Pete? I have not.
No?
No, I'm looking forward to talking to him.
Coach Haroff will be on. Dante DiCario will be on. We'll have lots happening.
Those guys I have met.
And still ahead in this edition of the show, we're going to check in with Farhan Lalji. Hour two is going to be a football hour. We're going to have Mike Abou-Meshrek, who's already here, dying in anticipation of his appearance in studio. And with Farhan, I want to talk a lot about what does that mean for Nathan Rourke with the New England Patriots signing Jacoby Brissett. It seems like any time we get excited about someone going south and they're about to get a chance, they seem to get more excited about some other retread as a backup. We saw it in Jacksonville with C.J. Beathard.
Mm-hmm. It's, NFL general managers are overly cautious when it comes to that sort of thing, rather than roll the dice on an unproven Canadian kid who may have more ability than a Jacoby Brissett. They stick with the guys who've been around the league, who've been backups for 5, 10, 15 years. And I don't know. As a fan, it's kind of dull, but I can see where they're, with the money involved, why they'd want to be cautious.
Yeah, I don't know. CJ Beathard just never got me excited.
No.
Like, I feel like let's remove the Canadian bias aside and let's pretend for a second that Nathan Rourke's not good enough. Hmm. And he very well may not be good enough down there. I think he's probably better than a number of starting quarterbacks in the NFL. But if we just pretend for a second that he's not good enough, does anybody honestly think that the Jaguars are going to get to the promised land or win any playoff games with CJ Beathard?
No.
Pulling the trigger?
Goodness, no. And honestly, I hope there's not a lot of Jags fans out there. I don't think Trevor Lawrence is the man. I think he had a heck of a collegiate career, but I don't know if he's the guy to get you there in the NFL.
You're not suggesting they should move on from Trevor Lawrence.
They've got too much money invested in him to move on, but I don't know if he'll win you a championship.
I don't mind Jacoby Brissett, actually. I think you can win with Jacoby Brissett. I think he's proved a few things that C.J. Beathard never did. Hmm. But either way, I think we would agree that all of these quarterbacks that we're talking about have absolutely, they have little to no mojo. And why wouldn't you take the chance on somebody who is a proven winner in the past, but we might be a little bit biased. You can join in on the discussion on the Capital Ford Lincoln text line, 306-936-6262. Call us toll free at 1-866-767-0620. Follow us on social media at SportsCage is our handle on Twitter and on Facebook. And also, before I forget, we are giving stuff away. And if you text, just looking for the word today, text the word show to 306-936-6262 for the chance to win two tickets to the Regina Spring Home Show. And that is happening next weekend. So again, the word is show. That is today's text word. We don't even make
people. I was really worried when went with the SH, but anyway.
We don't even make the prize pigs work anymore.
Oh, like, I know. I wonder if tomorrow's word will be home.
If what?
Tomorrow's word will be home. We've had spring. We've had show.
I see where you're going with this. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I don't know what you do for a fourth word, though.
It's not even hard to win these trivia things anymore.
Oh.
Like, I always did well when I was 11 years old because I knew all this stuff.
You were obsessed.
But not now. All you have to do is Google or Wikipedia, and I'll Google or Wikipedia. When we were doing the Breyer trivia, I would find the answer on Wikipedia, but I'd have to dig for it a little bit. A Google search wouldn't bring it up. Mm-hmm. That's what was nice about curling trivia. Google doesn't bring everything up. If we did NFL trivia, that would be very boring. People could just Google that, and they would have their answer in about 5 seconds.
Yep.
So we're going to make people dig for it. Well, not today. All you have to do is that text word. And we hope to announce the winner by the time we leave the air tonight. Still ahead on this edition of the program, Leo McDonald is going to join us to talk about his golf show.
Mm-hmm.
Big hit over on Access Now Sports.
One show that's worth a darn. Yeah.
And Jeff Currier on Where Are They Now for Flora Coverings International. I'll be curious as a resident of Winnipeg to get his take on what's happening with the Jets and all the worry about the season tickets and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to the Wednesday edition for Affordable Trailer Sales on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
This is the Wednesday edition of The Sports Cage, brought to you by Affordable Trailer Sales. The Celebration is on now at their South Service Road location. Save thousands on the RV of your dreams at Affordable Trailer Sales in Regina. Brendan McGuire, Pete Pascoe, and Mike Abou-Meshrek in studio.
Daddy's home.
One of these things is not like the others.
I was going to say, when's the last time you've been in this studio?
I guess.
A long time ago.
Yeah, I haven't been on with the previous administration, but I was on the show every Monday for 12 years. So Yeah, ever, no, it's great. Like I say, it's great to be home. I'm excited about it.
Did you ever use the one with all the windows, the Century Studio on the corner?
This is my first time on the corner office. We were shuffled off in the back. Well, it's a much better looking panel these days than I was back in back in the decade of decadence. But yeah, no, it's nice to be back. And thanks for inviting me. Thanks for bringing me. Go Riders.
I think one of the one of my favorite memories of you and I doing Regina Thunder football was the game between, it was at Libel Field, and they were playing against the Winnipeg Rifles.
And my son was on that team.
Were you at the game when, now Jux was his name, the quarterback for Winnipeg, he gets hit.
Oh, did he?
And it was a late hit, and he's laying on the turf, and the flag goes, and Abu says, okay, the flag's out, you can get up now. And they ended up cart this poor guy off.
He was a little more injured. Yeah.
Ambulance. Yeah. And I think it might have been the Rifles GM wrote in this big, long complaint about, you know, some of the analysis. And I said, oh, it's okay. We'll just go on air and Abu will do an apology. And one of the producers says, no, don't. He'll make a mockery of it. And I said, yeah, you're probably right.
It was funny for all the things that I'd have no filter and all the things I said. I'd never really remember any pushback from anybody, but maybe they just weren't telling me.
Good times for sure. What do you think of the off-season moves that have been happening? Seems like we're just hearing rave reviews from everybody. There were some complainings at the beginning of the off-season saying, why didn't we get rid of the GM? Why didn't we get rid of the CEO? Why didn't we get rid of the janitor?
And I think that's what I want. And I remember we talked probably just before Christmas or before, well, whether Jesus' birth or the CFL Christmas of February 15th. And that's what I was expecting. And that's kind of, being honest, that's what I wanted. And that's what a lot of people expected, was just a complete, let's start all over again.
Because, take it down to the studs.
Well, when you're making soup, you know, you can't just keep adding stuff because you don't like the taste of it. At some point, you've got to, you know, start all over again. You can't just keep putting things and, oh, we got a scrambling quarterback, but we got a stagnant offensive line. Oh, we got a great running back that runs between the tackles, but we got a quarterback that throws the lights out, so the running back's never going to get a chance. Like, isn't basketball, right? One or two guys in basketball, you can win. Football, you need, I was going to say 70 guys, but football, you at least need, you know, 12 studs out there. You know, you can have a couple holes, I guess, but you can't just start adding pieces. Players need to complement each other. There needs to be a plan. And I was worried that there wasn't going to be one. Now, Jeremy, you know how I love Jeremy. We won a championship together. Our kids played together. We played together beside each other. I don't like talking about him because, you know, you're critiquing your buddy.
Your friend, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
He is a professional, and he understands that that's part of the job.
I hope he does, but we all have feelings. And, I mean, if I don't know you, it's different. But anyways, I'm freaking pumped that Jeremy's kind of taking it by the neck and shaking it and is doing what he wants to do with it. You know, he went out and got Hardwick back, pumping up that offensive line. Had some injuries last year on the offensive line, but character guys like Hardwick that's going to help develop the younger nucleus. You know, the Riders have a lot of junior football players playing on their offensive line, which is amazing for the sport in Saskatchewan, amazing for development.
I think you were a big fan of Ferland when we did the Thunder games.
Yeah, and that's one of the guys that if you put, I mean, he's me. I mean, you put a guy that's okay between two studs, and that guy that's okay now starts rubbing off on him, and he starts being a lot better and probably better than his skill level. But that's not what... Bandy. There's a couple other guys there. They were playing beside each other. There was no one there to learn from. No one, when the going got tough, to be like, don't worry, kid, I got it. You block him, I got him. We're going to do this, no problem. And, you know, last offseason, they brought in some guys that were hurt. They got Hardwick now on the tackle. I don't know who was playing tackle last year, but for the first time since retiring 15 years ago, when someone said, you should play for the Riders, I was like, Yeah. Maybe you got something there.
It always seemed odd that they had two American tackles, and yet they could never really get settled. You would think that if you're able to burn an import spot, that we all think, because, and this is maybe just the stereotype against Canadian players, that it goes to show just because you plug in a couple of imports doesn't mean you're going to fix the problem, because they really never did.
Well, here's the thing about life and jobs. If you're good, you have a job. So if you're looking for someone to replace you sitting in that chair.
Ain't never happening.
You need someone good. There aren't guys.
Do you, though?
There aren't.
To replace Brendan?
Well, we're just saying. I mean, I'm just trying to use it in an example. Clearly, there's no one
he's
good.
He's just being nice to me today because I invited him.
No, but you need someone good. I hate Brendan. He's such a joker. All right, well, who else? Who are you going to put into place? People, not just around here, but maybe extra around here, like to complain, but without
a solution.
Without the solution.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I was terrible. I was garbage for so long. But you know what? No one was better than this garbage. So this garbage got to play for 10 years.
That was it.
Yeah. yeah. So, all the American tackles. You think anyone in the NFL wants a good offensive lineman? Any other 32 teams?
Worth their weight in gold.
Yeah. And that's a lot of weight.
That's a weight.
So, yeah, the good players have jobs. All of them. Every single one of them.
I don't know about you guys, and maybe you didn't, but I felt really bad for Evan Johnson last year, especially last year, because he's not a terrible football player, but he looked like it because he was lined up between a plug at right tackle every week. And so now you're worrying about, well, is he going to get blitzed inside? Do I have to worry about that? I've got my own responsibilities. I think 5 solid starters that can build some sort of chemistry, you can go a long way. Well, I know that's revolutionary thinking, but you really can't.
So here was my issue, and you and I talked about this, Abu. You said, I think we agreed at the end of 2022, these last 2 years are just a blur, I had to remember which one. Mm-hmm. I think we agreed that this offense had no great mojo from anybody, not from the quarterback, I'm going back to when Fajardo was still here, at the very end. But I remember you saying specifically, Coach Moss is good. He will get it. He will work somewhere. And he didn't just work. He got a head coach job. We saw how the season ended. I often wonder if part of the problem is 1 year you had a quarterback who would be impossible to block for. Would you want to block for Cody Fajardo?
I want to block for the guy where I know where he's going to be.
Yeah. Do you feel like just watching him? Just did you ever? I'm sure you must have thought about it because he moved around a lot.
When he needed to, and he had to a lot.
Okay.
He needed to move around a lot. Like, I'm not saying I won't play for a quarterback that scrambles, but I need to know that, like, if I'm blocking a guy and now you're scrambling, I need to know to let go. If I don't, like with Kerry Joseph, I knew that if my defensive lineman was moving, I had to let go. Otherwise, it was a holding call. Mm-hmm. I played with a guy named Kerwin Bell, who was a statue back there.
Oh, I remember
he was going to be there, and no matter what, he was going to be on that spot. And, yeah, I mean, not even just quarterback, running back, everybody, offensive line, like we're just talking about. It takes 12 guys, and you got to know where everyone else is going to be. If you don't, that's the guy that's going to make the tackle.
Well, the reason I asked the question, we had a good on In the Huddle back and forth with Chris Best the one day, and I felt like the O-line was just getting bludgeoned by the media and everybody, and it was just over and over and over, and not once did I ever hear Cody Fajardo come out and say, you know, I'm not the easiest guy to block for. It just seemed like they were hung out to dry. Mm-hmm. Nobody was going to accept any responsibility that, okay, the O-line deserved their share, but it wasn't just the O-line.
Whose job is it for accountability?
Everybody's.
The person at the top.
Right.
You come over to my business, we got 4 people working there. I'm the guy that's accountable.
And that's partly the quarterback,
isn't it? If someone else that screws up, it's my fault. I'm not. Mm. I don't tell my clients, oh, well, sorry, Bobby Joe made a mistake, and so Bobby Joe, go yell at them. No, it's my fault. It's my thing. And that's why Dickinson's not around anymore. Mm. That's why Dickinson shouldn't have been around last year, but the stupid rules in the CFL says that he had to be. He lost the room. He lost the direction. He lost accountability. He lost the players. There was no clear direction on which things were going, how the offense was being run. And there's no room for good guys in football. You can be a good guy, but if the first thing out of your mouth is, oh, he's a good guy, I don't want you on my team. Mm. And that was almost exclusive. Anyone we talked about Dickinson, he's a nice guy. Mm. Well, get that guy out of here and bring me an ass, you know? Bring me a jerk.
Yeah, I want he's a maniac, but he's also not a bad guy. But I want the maniac be the thing up front, especially if you're a linebacker.
It's almost like we had the pendulum go both ways, didn't we? From Chris Jones to Craig Dickinson as a head coach. And it's almost like when you go from one regime to the next, everything's clicking.
Well, welcome to politics. Let's vote for the person that, well, I don't care who I'm voting for. I'm voting against you. And that's, just a brief political note here. Vote for who you want, not who you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't vote. If you don't have, if you're not for someone, don't just be against things. Yeah, you know, Dickinson was put in a bad situation last year, and he was adding, oh, let's put some tomatoes in the soup. Oh, yeah, some oregano. Oh, wait, let's put some whatever. Let's just put low. So, like, everything's good.
But
let's
at that point, it's a bad meal.
Let's mix gum and nuts. I like both.
It's a bad meal at that point, I think, is what you're saying.
Yeah,
you can't just sprinkle on.
And then you go bowling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And that's a thing. And you know, Mace is a dog, man. He's a dog. He'll let you know. He'll lick your face, but he'll bite your ass if you ain't looking.
His press conference was hilarious, and you could tell Jeremy was just beaming, and you could see exactly why he chose him. We'll kick it around some more. Time to take a quick break, then we'll be back with more of the Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
We're talking sports on your way home. This is the Sports Cage on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Still ahead on this edition of the Sports Cage for Affordable Trailer Sales, we will check in with Jeff Currier, the former voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, for Four Coverings International. Brendan McGuire, Pete Pascu, and Mike Abu Meshrek. Before the break, we were just talking about Corey Mace, and you sit and chat with the guy for 5 minutes, and he's hilarious, and he just wins you over. And it seems like even the really negative naysayers have given this higher rave reviews so far.
Talking to him, do you think he cares what you think about him?
No, I don't get that impression.
Not even a little bit.
No. He's on his own program. That's how good he is. He has his own expectations.
Yeah, he's not a nice guy, because you know what? If you piss him off, he's going to bite you in the ass. We can say that.
Yeah. Oh no. Accountability.
Well, you just did.
And I think I've always responded well for that. Dave Ritchie just passed on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And
You would have played.
Absolutely.
For Coach Ritchie.
Yeah. It was all over Facebook and social media. I don't know if one person said he was a nice guy.
Sure.
Everyone said he was like a dad. He did. He brought us together. I love him. I love him.
Went after the refs for you. Like he would have your back. David Benefield said. He was on the show Monday, and that's what he said.
Yeah, that's actually, I was talking to Benny over Facebook a little bit about it. He had your back. But at the same time, if you didn't give him everything you had, like, I didn't make the team in my rookie year because I was good. I gave it because I gave him everything he had, and everything I had, and he knew it. And he's like, all right, we're going to teach you how to play football as long as you keep giving us. I mean, that's how I ended up here. Not because I was good, but because you knew that I was going to try hard. I mean, didn't always win, didn't always do well, but you got everything. And that when you're creating a team, that's what you need from everybody.
Straight shooter. I think that's what you're saying. Let's go to the text line. Trevor wants to know about Abu. He says, you'll have to ask him why he's so tanned. Were you down south this winter?
I'm Lebanese.
Okay. Did yes. you go south?
I did. I've been to Mexico and Phoenix since the beginning
of
the
year. Oh, Jesus.
My son had a soccer tournament in Phoenix a couple weeks ago, and man, I got a lot of time in the sun. A lot. It was so nice.
What was your playing weight?
About 320.
For real?
Yeah. Now I'm down to about 255 right now.
Jesus.
Yeah.
How hard is that on a guy's body? Because 255, you look good. This looks natural. This looks like a good weight.
It's because of my face is so good looking.
I hadn't even made it up that far yet.
You can tell him he's a good looking guy. It's fine.
You know what? When you leave football, especially, everybody, but the linemen especially, you're used to going to the gym for, you know, 3-4 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And some guys are sick of going to the gym, and some guys still go to the gym. And it's more a mental thing. I mean, you keep working out. I mean, I don't need to bench 500 pounds anymore.
No.
You know, and it's hard to do. I need to do, you know, 100 five times, or, you know, just do more reps. It's just the same effort, just different workouts. And the food, I'm still learning about portion size. you got to eat a heck of a lot less. A lot less.
I remember chatting with you at the gym the one day I just bumped into you, and you were watching somebody standing on like the yoga ball or the Bosu ball. Is that what they call it? I don't even know.
The half ball?
Yeah.
Bosu.
Yeah. And it was some lady, and she's like got perfect balance. And he says, That's what I want to do. I like those workouts because that's controlling your body.
Yeah, and that's what I've been doing.
And I thought that was interesting from somebody who their whole life, it was all about getting bigger and lifting heavy weights that ultimately.
You can spend an hour, half, 2 hours trying to get bigger, or you can spend, 45 minutes working on the small muscles and then just do a few reps with weights. It's just different workouts. And Larry Hiller, my university coach, told me, you're strong when you can control your own body weight. And I'm like, what do you mean? I can bench 400 pounds. He goes, yeah, but can you do a pull-up? No.
That's interesting. That's
You got boobs, but you're not strong.
I would have assumed that someone who could bench press 400 could do a pull-up, but I never thought of that. That's a really interesting point.
Have you seen my ass? That should be like a word every time I say that we drink or something. Yeah, no. I mean, offensive linemen have stronger lower bodies. I mean, big, thick lower bodies. Mm-hmm. Not always conducive to pulling that up.
I was going to ask you, so about the player changes that they've made, I thought a little bit about the move from Jamal Morrow to AJ Ouellette. And now that we've learned that Jamal couldn't pass his physical, I think that move looks better and better. But I think that what we're seeing them do, and you would know about this because you've actually played the position, played the game, with the quarterback they have, Trevor Harris, who's a quick release guy, he doesn't hold the ball for very long, with a retooled offensive line, and with a smash mouth running back, I feel like they have made it their mission not to be zero sacks. What do they say? Zero G when they're trying to cut down on garbage. Zero. It feels like the number one priority is whether we win or not, we are going to get those sack numbers down. People are not going to rip on us over quarterback sacks.
I just had a deja vu to last year when we were talking. Maybe it was on the other show. There was no direction last year. Trevor Harris got hurt. And they put in a quarterback, not someone that complemented Trevor's style. So last year, they didn't really have an offensive what was their offensive style? Like, what did they do? Did they pass? Was it play action? Like, what was...
They never had an identity.
What was their identity? And this year, they're doing it. They got road graders up front. They got AJ Ouellette. They're going to hand the ball off on first down, throw the ball on second down. Like, there's a plan there. Like, and you're going to be good at it. If you don't know what you're doing, you can't be good at it. You know, here we come. We're going to come. We're going to punch in the mouth. We're going to run the ball. We're going to get it second and short. We're going to throw underneath. That's what our offensive game plan. I don't know if that's what it is, but it looks like they have some sort of direction now. It looks like they're putting the pieces in place that fit the puzzle. And again, it's not necessarily what they're doing this year. It's just the show that it was last year. It was just like it was they were making chicken soup and they're putting milk in it and they're putting pieces of ham and here's a paper clip, let's put that in the soup, and gum, some nuts. They were just throwing stuff in, and the soup turned out to be
sour.
Well, if you're doing that in front of your parents when you were a kid, you'd get in trouble. Whereas this year it looks like well calculated. Trevor Harris is a bit long in the tooth, so yeah, you got to protect him. But he knows where to throw the ball. Get the ball, throw the ball. He's not and neither was Cody. Cody wasn't a third and long quarterback, or second and long quarterback. They're outstanding, like most quarterbacks are, at second and short down distance. Favorable. So they're playing. It looks like they're going to be playing smart ball this year instead of just let's have chicken soup. I really like that analogy. I think it fits.
With paper clips.
Hey, when you're trying to put on bulk, you just use what you can.
Oh, absolutely.
I like all the food analogies. By the way, Abu hosted us for a Super Bowl party 1 year and made the best chicken wings, bar none.
I'm not actually shocked. Not shocked at all.
See, this is the first year I haven't hosted a Super Bowl party, and it was kind of sad.
Time to start again.
Yeah.
Tell us about the O-line. I think we've got a pretty good idea of who at least four of the five starters are going to be.
That's what I was actually going to say. Who's the fifth?
And is that the right tackle? No, right tackle's harder. It's the left tackle.
The left tackle. Who's that going to be?
Guess we'll find out in training camp.
Do you see anyone on the roster that stands out in terms of the guy that could? I mean, last year they had guys.
I didn't see anybody last year that really stuck out.
They still got a lot to prove.
Yeah, and that's a great opportunity. I don't mean it as a slight to anybody, but yeah, you got a chance. Go get that bone. We're looking for dogs. We're always looking for dogs. There's a bone out there. Bring in three, four tackles, American, Canadian, and go. Compete.
Have you filled out your March Madness bracket?
Wait, did you send me the email yet?
No, not yet. Okay.
I don't know.
You've thought about it as much as I have. nice to see you.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for bringing me home.
Thanks for coming in. This is fun. Mm-hmm. That is Mike Abu-Meshrek, who we hope to have on this program many more times in the months and years ahead. When we come back, we will check in with Farhan Lalji. You're listening to the Wednesday Sports Cage, brought to you by Affordable Trailer Sales on Rider Radio, 620 CKRM.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Sports Cage. Now back to the action on Sports Radio 620 CKRM.
Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on this edition of the program. Still ahead in hour three, we'll check in with Leo McDonald, talk about his golf show and the Regina Red Sox season coming up.
And could probably talk to him about hockey too if we wanted. Leo's well-versed.
Still working for Portland? That I think I he's still on their payroll. We'll find out when he comes on in hour three. And this week's Where Are They Now for Floor Coverings International, our good friend Jeff Currier will join us, now retired from CJOB Radio in Winnipeg. But right now, we go out on to the Western Pizza Hotline. Very pleased to be joined by TSN's Farhan Lalji. Farhan, good day.
Brendan, how are you?
Doing well. We had Mike Abu-Meshrek in studio for the first time in 6 years, and it was great. He hasn't changed a bit. I wanted to talk a little bit about the New England Patriots quarterback room. I'm sure you've been watching that with added interest. A few others out on the West Coast, probably too. Most people are expecting that they're going to take a quarterback in the draft, and still, we felt pretty good about Nathan Rourke's spot down there. He might be the number two, or he might even, God forbid, be the number one if they think whoever they draft needs a little more time. Then they went out and they got Jacoby Brissett. How do we feel about his chances of seeing any meaningful playing time in New England? Do we feel any better than we did in when he was in Jacksonville?
I don't know. Probably less so, right? I mean, I did think they were going to get a veteran to come in. You know, their plan, my understanding of the New England situation is, like everybody else, they are expected to take a quarterback with the number three pick. Could they potentially trade down? They could. I think it's unlikely. So knowing that, I mean, anytime you have a quarterback that you take that high in the draft, you generally want a mentor quarterback to come in and help work with him. So I think the thought was at the time that Nathan was going to get to compete with that mentor for playing time. But you can still have the mentor in the building, and in the quarterback room, I mean, he doesn't have to necessarily be number two, right? But then they go and get Jacoby Brissett, who is certainly one of the names we thought they would look at, but $8 million with a chance to get to 10. And I'm not sure how much of that is guaranteed, but you have to know that some of it is. And on top of that, he worked with Alex Van Pelt, the new offensive coordinator, in Cleveland last year and had some success in Cleveland last year. So I'm not faithful. I'm not loving the situation that Nathan finds himself in. I don't know that there's a perfect situation out there, but I'm not necessarily loving this one. And now, all of that said, the belief, I am told that New England very much wants to ensure that quarterback they draft high sits the first year, right? And then they want to pull a Patrick Mahomes and just have him sit, have him learn, and we'll play him at the right time. And if that is the case, then, you know, maybe there is a window there for Nathan Rourke to beat out Jacoby Brissett at some point in the season. So for me, you know, I'm guessing I'll probably be at training camp with the Patriots, and I was there with Jacksonville last year, and when you went to the Jacksonville camp, you just saw a scenario where Nathan just wasn't getting reps. Like, you could count on two hands the number of reps he was getting. So even though he was promised a chance to compete, he never was actually given one. And here, he's being promised a chance to compete for number two. Let's see if he's actually given that chance.
Seems like this is a pattern with CFL guys who go down there. Now, I'm going back a ways for basis of comparison, but Doug Flutie signs with the Buffalo Bills, and there's chatter that he could be the number one, and it was right after that they signed Rob Johnson to that ridiculously high contract. Mm. Promised one thing, then another. Same thing with Nathan Rourke in Jacksonville. They go, they get C.J. Beathard. Now we're seeing it here. Is this just reinforcing that belief that the NFL coaches really don't put stock in a quarterback who has CFL experience?
No, don't buy it at all. And I say that because people in Canada, like, they look and they just keep looking in the mirror, and they're so myopic with their takes on this. The NFL doesn't give a damn where the guy comes from in this situation. So whether you are an undrafted free agent from Germany or an undrafted free agent from a Division II school or an undrafted free agent from the CFL, like, I just don't think it matters. And Doug Flutie was different. Doug Flutie had a name. He was a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. So there was some buzz around him wherever he was going to wind up going. Nathan Rourke has no name. So Nathan Rourke is no different in the eyes of the NFL guys than any other undrafted free agent. The fact that he's done whatever he's done in the CFL is not relevant. So anybody who thinks that, oh, well, it's the CFL guys that are getting screwed or it's the Canadian guys that are getting screwed, they just don't look at it that deeply, right? Like, they believe so heavily in their scouting departments that those guys that get taken near the top of the draft have a ton of runway. And in the case of Nathan, he didn't get taken high in the draft. He didn't get taken in the draft at all, so he has no runway. So, he's just got to stumble into the right place at the right time and make a huge impression when someone gets hurt and he gets an opportunity. Make a huge impression in training camp, right? Like, those types of things. He made a great impression in the preseason last year, not necessarily in training camp or even in OTAs before that. Let's see what the opportunity looks like. But if it's not a great opportunity, like, understand this, Brendan. We're the only ones talking about him. Mm-hmm. We're the ones tweeting about him. We're the ones posting about him and having takes on him. In the U.S., nobody cares.
It's a non-story.
They just don't. Yeah, it's just not, right? Like, so the thought that it's because he's a CFL guy is just fantasy.
Farhan, are you one of the people that believes that whatever happens between now and then, Caleb Williams will be the first person off the board in the NFL draft? And I guess if so,
yeah,
what do you do with Justin Fields?
Well, they're trying, right? And I mean, I think every day they go through this, the draft compensation that comes back the other way is getting lesser, right? I mean, this guy's going to wind up being Trey Lance, which is unfortunate because Justin Fields has played, right? Like, Trey Lance just hasn't, right? So he's dripping and dripping and dripping. He's in Dallas now. He's the third. And, will he pass Cooper Rush and become the second? Who knows? But Dak's the guy. We know that, right? So the same thing's happening with Justin Fields, except, he's shown a few things. Now, he's still shown a lot of warts, and I think they expected more growth than they've gotten to this point, right? And some of it is on the team in terms of, changes in coaching and offensive coordinators and all of this. But, what's the value, right? Like, is Denver going to take a flyer on Justin Fields and, give up, what, a fourth-round pick, third-round pick? Like, what's that look like? So the longer it takes, the Bears just have zero leverage here. So, you've got six quarterbacks that are going to be taken in the top 50. Potentially six that get taken in the first round, but more likely in the top 50. So if you're interested in a quarterback, would you rather do that and go through some growing pains, or would you rather take Justin Fields? Because if you take Fields, you're probably thinking he's going to be your starter, and maybe you don't believe in him at that based on what you've seen for 3 years. So the Bears are in a tough spot because, remember, they traded to get that pick. They're going to get nothing near what they gave up, and it's going to be like what San Francisco had to do with Lance. The only difference was San Francisco also happened to hit with a sixth-round pick and quarterback, right?
Mm-hmm. Having said that, do you have a prediction as to who the second quarterback will be taken off the board? Yeah, I think it varies day by day. One minute, the Jaden Daniels fans are speaking up. Next, it's Bo Nix or Drake May, but do you have a number two guy?
Well, there's no chance it's going to be Bo Nix. It's Drake May, and I think J.J. McCarthy is climbing fast and probably doesn't get out of the top seven or eight. If it was me picking, I would probably take Jaden Daniels, but I think both of these guys have questions. Heck, Caleb Williams has questions, right? Like, there's no one that comes into it as perfect in their evaluation as Trevor Lawrence was at that time. Now, say what you want about Trevor today, but, Trevor Lawrence is one of the four highest graded quarterbacks when he came out of the draft, right? Like, with the Andrew Luck, John Elway's, Peyton Manning. Like, it was those four. That's it. Right? And Caleb Williams, while he could be Patrick Mahomes, there's questions. Last year brought out questions in his game. There's other stuff going on in the background that leads to questions. And, I look at May and I see accuracy concerns. I see decision-making concerns, when I look at Daniels, like, I see a slight guy who looks like he could be prone to injury and, also has some of the same concerns, but he's just such a breathtaking athlete that, you overlook some of that maybe. But you're right. I mean, it just depends on the flavor. I'm curious to see who trades up
just being so desperate to get a quarterback that they give up more than they should for quarterbacks that have questions. But there's such an insatiable appetite at the position. And the one thing I like with all of these guys, there's room to draft for ceiling, right? Like, I'm listening to the analysis on Kenny Pickett and what's going to happen now that Russell Wilson has been taken, has been signed by Pittsburgh. And when you draft Kenny Pickett and you draft Mac Jones, you're drafting for floor. You're not drafting for ceiling. And I think that's a mistake. Whereas all of these guys, potentially all six of these guys, you're drafting for ceiling. And I'm excited to see which one of these guys hit.
You had suggested Denver and Justin Fields in the same sentence. And I'm legitimately a true blue Denver Bronco fan, probably even more than I am a Vancouver Canuck fan. Do you see that a marriage happening, Denver and Justin Fields? Because as a Bronco fan, I'd be all in on that. I think Justin Fields was a diamond surrounded by trash in Chicago. I really do.
Yeah, you could be right, and this is going to certainly show what Sean Payton can do, right? And Sean Payton got turned off by Russell Wilson, the person. And again, there's no ceiling left in Russell Wilson, right? Like, Russell, even if he can function as a starting quarterback in this league, his best days are behind him. I think everybody understands that. It's just, can he be ordinary? Whereas there's still a ceiling with Justin Fields. And so if you're Sean Payton and you can get Fields for a mid-round draft pick, and now you can, trade your pick, whether it's forward or back, and get additional picks, like, that roster's got some massive holes in it, right? And so if I'm Sean Payton, and I believe in myself, I probably go out and make that deal for pennies on the dollar, and then I use that first-round draft pick to really fortify my roster, again, whether you trade up or trade back, because there's needs there. So I could absolutely see it happening, but the market for Justin Fields is getting smaller and smaller by the minute.
I guess circling back to Rourke, but this time the other one, Curtis Rourke, what do you think? Well, this is so highly speculative, so I apologize for that, but what do you think is going through his mind when he sees everything that's happening to his older brother and the machinations that he has to go through to get a roster spot?
Well, I mean, try to get drafted, right? Like, at the end of the day, he's in a good position because he's in the Big Ten and he's going to be seen. So, they've made some changes. They've added from in the portal at Indiana. And, I want to see what that team looks like. But if he can get that team to, 7-5, right, and can throw for 3,500 yards and 35 touchdowns, he's got all the physical tools that Nathan maybe didn't, just in terms of size and pure arm talent coming out of college, because that was the big knock on Nathan. His arm talent now is significantly better than it was when he left Ohio. So now he's put himself on a bigger stage. It's not necessarily the greatest program, but it is in one of the two big conferences, and he's going to get to play some of these big boys. And even if his team loses, can he put up some points? Can he handle the beating? Can he just show the talent that we know he has, that last year dealing with the knee injury coming into the season, hurt him? So, that's my hope, right? 7-5, can you get to 3,500 yards? Can you get to 35 touchdowns? Can you be a second or a third team all Big Ten quarterback? And if that happens, he's probably going to go on day three, and then that'll give him some runway, right? He doesn't get cut right out of the gate. He can get to the combine. He can show some of those things. So, those are the things, if I'm Curtis Rourke, that I'm looking at. I don't necessarily look at what Nathan has been through, coming out of Ohio and coming out of the CFL. I think his story is different. He's 6'5". He's got a bigger arm. He's playing in a bigger conference, and he's got a bigger opportunity at this stage in his career.
Do you think there's a 50-50 chance that he starts in Canada, his pro career?
No, I don't. I think Curtis is going to have some success, and I think at the very least, Curtis will probably be on a practice roster in the NFL next year. Now, is he willing to go through what Nathan's willing to go through? Like, is he that determined to play at that level no matter what? I don't know, right? Like, I mean, I do know Curtis. We've spent some time together, and he's a great kid. But he's different than Nathan. He really is wired differently, and maybe he's just as passionate. But if he is, it's kind of come later in his career, right? Whereas Nathan was just so singularly focused. There's a chance, but I do think that he's going to take at least one twirl at the NFL at the front end. And again, it really is going to come down to the year he has now and what that first opportunity looks like. So for me, I think he's going to do enough to be a late round draft pick or a priority free agent signing in the NFL. And maybe the CFL's got a way to hear.
And you know what? Maybe that's okay. I think it's probably better for Canadian quarterbacks and for the CFL that we're seeing things like this happen. And I think if Curtis Rourke has a good year at Indiana and makes it onto an NFL roster, that's probably a win-win for everybody, even though he doesn't showcase his talents up here. Farhan, thank you for this. We'll talk again next week.
Gentlemen, have a great weekend. Talk to you soon.
That is Farhan Lalji from TSN, our guest on the Western Pizza Hotline. Perfect pizza with a generous amount of toppings, plus Greek food like souvlaki, ribs, salads, all the goodness you can't make at home. Call Western Pizza today. When we come back, Benny Walchuk and the SJHL Report. You're listening to the Sports Cage on Rider Radio, 620 CKRM.
The Kings of Saskatchewan Sports Talk. This is the Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
It's time for the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League report on the Sports Cage. I'm Benny Walchuk. The Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League announced their weekly award winners for this past week, and the Malva Millionaires dominated with three winners announced. Goaltender Will Dyke captured a third SJHL Goalie of the Week. Males forward Luke Beato was named the Rookie of the Week, and Bradley Banach, after a five-goal week performance, was the MVP of the week. Meanwhile, Battleford's forward and reigning SJHL Player of the Year Keon Bell was the Forward of the Week. North Stars defenseman Tanner Gold was the week top defenseman, and Malford netminder and Saskatoon products James Venn was the Saskatchewan Player of the Week. Also, throughout the year, there's been some great highlights from the 2023-24 season, and the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League is looking for your vote for the SJHL Highlight of the Year. Finalist number one is Humble Bronco forward Connor Miller and his goal over the Malva Millionaires at the Warman Showcase in November. Finalist number two is Jerome Maharaj. The Weyburn Star went end-to-end to set up Nicholas Kovach for a piece of brilliant action in early January. Finalist number three is Adam Kelly of the Yorkton Terriers and Harmon Laser Hume of the Flin Flon Bombers, trading miraculous saves in an overtime showdown in late January at the Whitney Forum. And the fourth finalist is Kindersley Clippers netminder Cody Jamin, robbing Humboldt star Spencer Bell blind in late February. You can vote down on what you think is the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League highlight of the year. The winner will be chosen the SJHL playoff preview show on Wednesday, March the 20th at 1 p.m. across the SJHL social media platforms. You can vote for the highlight of the year in the SJHL at www.sjhl.ca. There's two games on the schedule last night in the SJHL. Finley Radloff had two goals, while Braden Jockums had a goal and two assists, as the Nipawin Hawks snapped the Malva Millionaires' six-game winning streak with a 5-2 victory on the road last night in Belleville. Elsewhere, Spencer Bell netted two goals and added one apple, led the Humble Broncos to hammer the Notre Dame Hounds 6-1 on the big ice in Wilcox. With the win, the Broncos moved 1 point ahead of Battleford into third place overall in the SJHL standings. There's one game tonight in the league. It'll feature the Weyburn Red Wings, who sit in a tie for sixth place in the standings. They'll be on the road in Wilcox against the Notre Dame Hounds starting at 7:30 p.m. from the Duncan McNeil Arena. With today's Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League report on the Sports Cage, I'm Benny Walchuk.
Benny, our guy on the ground in the SJHL on the SJHL report. Still ahead in hour three of the show. Leo McDonald. Haven't talked to him in forever.
It's been
probably
a year for me.
Pretty close. He somehow got in tight with Mike Johnson.
Huh.
The guy who coached the Pittsburgh Penguins for a little while with Sidney Crosby. Mm-hmm. They go back to their University of Brandon days. Mm. And so we always hear about people who are scouts, and you ask, well, what do you do? What does a scout do? And it can have very many different meanings. Sometimes you are scouting for somebody for the draft. Mm-hmm. But you see Leo at a lot of WHL games. And I think his responsibility is more just keeping an eye on what's happening out here and providing intel for players who the Portland Winterhawks might want to acquire from out in this division.
Interesting.
He is the eyes and ears of the Portland Winterhawks in Saskatchewan.
That seems to be working out pretty well for both sides.
If he's still doing it. I don't know if he discontinued. I think he's still doing it. We will ask him.
So many things to find out.
In hour three. I'm excited to check in with Jeff Currier, too, for Floor Coverings International. Just because the landscape of the sportscaster has changed quite dramatically since Jeff filled that role.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like Jeff would be a departure from what you see in today's sportscasting world, where sports is everything. And Jeff was never that way.
Jeff is so blunt. Jeff was a journalist who broadcast games These days, broadcasters work on behalf of the team primarily.
Right. And some of that's okay. Listen, I'm glad the teams are hiring journalists, and some of them do a great job. And they give resources to do a good job with the social media, the storytelling, the documentaries. But those people who work for the team are not going to bring their fastball when they're working with the team.
Oh, no.
I want the fastball. I miss the fastball. Not in a trashy, sensationalistic sort of way, the way some do it. Like that, what's his name? Stephen A. Smith.
Oh.
I don't mind all of his analysis, but sometimes I think he goes a little overboard.
Could be worse. Could be Skip Bayless.
Right. And he was worse. He was totally worse.
So much worse.
Right. So I want somebody who's objective and who's not looking to make headlines and who's not trashy.
But who is fair and aggressive when needs to be.
And fair and balanced. Yes. Yes. Very well put. So we'll talk to Jeff a little bit about that. And one piece of advice Jeff gave me when I was a young broadcaster was don't get too attached to how the team you're covering is doing. And I thought about that, and maybe these are my own reasons. Number one, if you get too attached, you cheat the listener or viewer, in this case, the listener. And number two, you kind of ruin it for yourself.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than doing a broadcast and loving the job no matter what, no matter how it comes out. The story is fascinating. I even think covering the Rough Riders the last 2 years, that was fascinating how that happened. Didn't work out for the fan base. And listen, Vince Scully said it best when he was asked, do you cheer for the Dodgers? Do you want them to win? He says, I don't know. He says, I want them to do well because they're good people and I want the fans to be happy. But I'm not going to get all wrapped up in how the team performs.
I think Jeff Currier told me the exact same thing when I asked him about his relationship with the Riders. Exactly. Word for word.
Almost. And it was very contentious sometimes. And that's okay. And in those days, radio truly was king because, like you said, a lot of the games were not broadcast on television.
Right.
So he carried a pretty big stick and he knew how to use it. And that seems to be fewer and further between, especially with the retirement of Bob Irving, who Bob was a big homer. But Bob was critical. Like I would listen to their broadcasts, and because of his stature, he could ask those tough questions.
Well, and, that's the thing. You can't just show up, be the new guy, and start pinning people to the wall with your questions. It's built up credibility.
It takes a while to get that pigskin cred. I don't know what you call it. Street cred.
Right. Yep.
In that universe. Coming up, we will check in with our friend Leo Mack. You're listening to The Sports Cage here on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
Welcome inside the Radio Octagon. This is Saskatchewan's number one sports talk show, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Hour three on the Wednesday edition of the program for affordable trailer sales. Brendan McGuire and Pete Pasco with you on this edition of the program. Again, brought to you by Affordable Trailer Sales. The Sale-O-Bration is on now at their South Service Road location. Save thousands on the RV of your dreams at Affordable Trailer Sales in Regina. It's almost like the in-studio day. We had Abu in studio for a half hour. Now we got Leo Mack in studio for half an hour. The host of Birdies and Bogeys. And let's see, what else? Regina Red Sox broadcaster on Access Now Sports. Father of Mitch and Leo. What else am I going to add?
Jeff.
Mitch and Jeff. Sorry. And you are Leo.
Your old dad.
And Stephanie as well, of course.
And Stephanie. And also Mike Johnson's longtime eyes and ears in Saskatchewan for the Portland Winterhawks.
Yeah, 16 years now, if you can believe it.
I was just going to ask you, so you're still in your same role? You haven't relinquished that or slowed that down?
It's a fantastic gig with the Portland Winterhawks. They're scout the Western Hockey League for trades and deals, and boy, I love the gig.
So I was going to ask you about that. So I always thought that you were the eyes and ears of Saskatchewan and Manitoba. But do you do work elsewhere? Like, do they send you out on the road? Do you have tasks, things? Do you just give observations on things just because he wants a view from 10,000 feet?
Well, primarily my gig, my job is to know the East Division of the Western Hockey League. And, of course, I'll move into the Central as well. So when any players' names come up for trades and deals, you know, Pete, whatnot, Michael say, what do you think of this guy? You know, how do you like this guy? Where does he fit? I get my input. And what I like about that is it's immediate. You know, as a Bantam scout, I did that for 2 years. And, you know, it's fine. So much happier where I am now. But, you know, as a backup schedule, you've got about 2 years to see any results.
Right.
Whereas if, you know, I make a recommendation on a player and it turns out to be wrong, we're going to find out within a week or two. So it's a little bit more fun that way. It's a little bit more dynamic. It's a little bit more, I feel like I'm involved again, like I used to be coaching in GM. I have more fun with it, and it's worked out pretty well so far. You know, Mike and I go back to the BU days we played together.
Brandon University.
Yeah, Brandon U, thanks. And, man, that's, I think about that. That's late 70s. That's, what is that, 40 years ago?
I don't 40,
45 years
Leo
ago?
Just dated himself.
Oh, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Please.
But I look 30.
Yes,
well,
it
got pretty
sure
quiet.
Yeah,
what happened?
I was gonna.
Were you born in a leap year? Or?
No.
decade.
But I know you've had a lot of high end roles. Like you were the very first person director of hockey operations for the LeBret Eagles. Was that the title?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Actually, I was hired to set up the franchise, basically. So my job there in the about 92, 93, 94 was to, you know, first of all, scout, sign players, you know, for that SHL franchise.
Start from nothing.
Exactly. Started from zip and set up the marketing plan and find advertisers and sponsors for that as well. And you know what? That was a good gig as well. Proud of myself because we had a really good start with that franchise. Was off and running. Brad McEwen, good friend of mine as well, took over the coaching GM role. And led that team to, you know, successive years.
And great opportunities for First Nations kids,
too. It was,
too.
Yeah. I really liked the idea of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, SHL embraced it. It's too bad it fell. And it lasted about 10 years. But, you know, the principle was good. It was a good idea. And it was also, you know, I was all over the place, going all over the, you know, BC, Alberta, et cetera, looking for players. Even made deals with East Coast. So it was very hands-on, obviously. A lot of fun. Really enjoyed it. Guys treated me well. Just another good experience. Long line of, I think I've had a lot of good experiences. You know, going to the Rock, Flin Flon was, again, glad I went. I haven't gone back because it's a long ways up there.
Glad to get out of there at some point.
Well, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, when you're coaching, we always had a two-year window. Two-year plan.
Yeah,
you know, you want to go in there and be successful and move on. And the other side of that coin was, you know, the franchise probably wanted you to move on after a couple of years. It was just the way it was. Pretty volatile for coaches, GMs, you know. And I was there for 3 years. You know, moved on, went to North Battleford, then to LeBret, then to UVar Cougars and Pats. Pat Canadians, you know, I always talk about the Pats.
It's funny, you have a really good connection to this radio station. I remember when Pats hockey first came on this radio station in 1995. Every night, the post game show with Leo Mack. Every night.
Yeah, it was my first year with the Pats, too.
There you go.
Yeah, so, Rich Preston, I'll tell you.
Still going, almost 30 years strong.
Yeah, which is, I always listen to it, actually, too. I'll be zipping to the rink, and I'll do my pregame scouting, you know, listening to the pregame talk show, and I'll listen to some post-game reviews, and I remember being up there and talking about how the game went or what's going on with our power player, or this player's doing well, that player, he's going to pick up his pace, and yeah, it's all fun. It's no regrets, really enjoyed it, met a lot of great people in the line of business I'm in, you know, in terms of sports. I'll call it sports because I've got the golf shows you mentioned as well. I've always been involved in golf, baseball, hockey. You know, I'm lucky. The only thing that I lack, you know, having all those experiences, is that huge paycheck.
Oh. What the heck? I just assumed.
Oh, wow. I'm talking like, you know, those multi-million dollar deals. I got multi-hundred dollar deals.
I'm a hundredaire, baby. So I was going to ask you about that. You've always been a multi-sport guy, as you just told everyone.
Mm-hmm. Or we like to tease him, jack of all trades, master of none.
Oh, that's fair.
Well, yeah. You know, when I was a kid, I played everything.
Sure.
Pick a game, I played it.
That's what everybody's supposed to do.
What about now? Exactly. When kids are specializing in sports at like the age of eight.
I hate it.
Me too.
I honestly, you know, I raised my three kids on the basis of how I grew up. Like all the kids, they played soccer, They played baseball. They played hockey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kids were all athletic, you know. The boys, well, even Stephanie as well, you know, played Tier 1 hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, Jeff played Team SAS soccer mm-hmm. and Tier 1 hockey, overlapping seasons. Played AAA baseball, of course. So did Mitch. Stephanie played baseball for Team Saskatchewan. And they played all the school sports you could think of as well. They were playing volleyball, basketball. And, you know, we were busy. Mm-hmm. But boy, so much fun too. The kids had a blast. You meet people. The social enhancement that you get from playing sports, well, it's proven. It's a fact. You know, the competitive nature of it, you know, the camaraderie, mm-hmm. cooperation, discipline, all those factors really spill over into life as well. And I'm a huge proponent of sport, besides being fun.
Yeah, what a novel concept. You mentioned you didn't get the multi-million dollar paycheck. You were motivated by the love of the sport. What a novel concept.
Yeah.
But that's true. I had a chat with Mitch one day, and I asked him, which sport does he really love more than the other, baseball or hockey? He couldn't pick. Yeah. And that tells you that's really what it's all about. It's just competition, camaraderie.
Well, yeah, it really is, you know, and it's also a personal challenge, isn't it? You know, you want to see how you measure up. So, what do? You go out and you practice mm-hmm. and doing things like that. So, you got that self discipline, you know, and again, all the different people you meet from the different realms of the sports that you're engaged in, whether it be provincial, national, like, you know, Mitch and Jeff, professional, et cetera. And, I could go on and on. And as a parent, is there anything better than sitting there watching the kids play and having fun and being successful, whatever the level is, having some sort of success as a parent? That's a dream.
Can you do that, though? You obviously have extensive experience coaching. I don't have nearly as much, mm-hmm. but I had a heck of a time watching my kid play and not be a coach from the stands. Like, I wouldn't yell stuff out, but I'd be like, okay, pass the puck, skate, okay, swing at that one.
Move.
Yeah,
no, do something.
I had to go sit by myself most of the time because I couldn't relate to the people in the stands because I was always coaching.
Yeah, no, I'd say I'd be coaching my mind, and I wouldn't say much at all except to, you know, maybe my wife say, oh, you know, you didn't read that curveball, something like that, mm-hmm. you know, or even hockey or sports-wise. But no, I'd sort of, you know, enjoy the game, watch what they're doing, and then quite often we'd have on the ride home, we'd have a little chat. What'd you think of the game, or how's this? And, you know, if this concept might work, and what do you think of that concept? Well, coach says this. Well, I agree with that. And so that part was fun, too. I had a lot of fun breaking down the games and mm-hmm. talking with the guys about it, especially when they got older. You know, with Stephanie, it was a little bit of the same, not as much. I'd probably get pies thrown at me or something, but, you know, the girls are a little bit different than the guys in terms of the competitive nature, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, they play, they have fun, and depending on the level of interest, practice will vary. The boys, they were more, whatever it was, they're practicing, they're going, they're working on things, they're asking questions. So, yeah, I was one of those parents that, you know, jumped up and down. And
no, don't like those.
No, you know, you're really into it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I really tried to temper it with, man, he or she, they're doing so well. Well, that was a nice move, and really enjoy that part. Mm-hmm. You know? Enjoy their successes.
Just have fun with it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and then the rest will come, as far as I'm concerned, and it did.
And we'll talk a little bit, Regina Red Sox baseball, of course. Leo, very involved mm-hmm. with that organization, especially from a broadcaster perspective. We'll be back with more of Leo Mack. You're listening to The Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
You're listening to the radio home of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, The Sports Cage on 620 CKRM.
Still ahead on the Wednesday edition of The Sports Cage, where are they now for Floor Coverings International? We'll visit with Jeff Currier, the former voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We could have done that segment with Leo, but everybody knows where Leo is because he's everywhere. He's on the TV, he's on the radio. Still with Leo McDonald here in the Sports Cage studio. We talked about the hockey stuff. I wanted to mm-hmm. talk about the Regina Red Sox. And, of course, Ernie Witt is coming to town for their dinner coming
like
up.
That's bankers, exciting. By the way. I really like the format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, where you're up on the stage. And you've done a great job with that as well. And they just tell stories.
Mm-hmm.
I remember 20 years ago or 25 years ago, whatever it was. I'll say, over 20 years ago. When they first started, it was always a speech. And that's so difficult to do.
Yeah. Not so conversational.
Well, it's zero conversation.
Plus, you're bringing in somebody from out of town. They don't know the audience. They don't know the people. They don't know what they're interested in.
But this new format, I'll call it new, is just, you're so engaging with the audience. I just love it. You're hearing stories that you're not going to hear in a speech, probably. Mm-hmm. And it's, and that banquet is coming up with Ernie Witt. It's going to be, again, another probably sellout and just fun to be at.
Awesome place to be. Who's your favorite one that they've had so far? I'll tell you mine. Mine was Todd Stottlemyre. But that's largely because I was involved and Gary Brotzel called me like a week before and said, hey, would you mind interviewing Todd Stottlemyre on stage? I'm like, would I mind? Hmm. And he was just so happy to be here. He kept saying, like, even at the intermission, he's like, oh, you guys, he's shaking our heads. This is just so awesome because there's this big audience hanging off, you know, his stories. But was there one who jumps out? I'll throw another one out, Cito Gaston, but...
Yeah, you know what? I kind of enjoyed, because of the controversy a little bit with
Canseco. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah, Canseco.
A lot of people talked about that one.
Yeah. I like that one. And I, you know, I enjoyed seeing the Getzlaff boys as well last year. I think, you know, there's a local tie-in and, gee, talk about a sports family there.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
And Ryan put on the shirt that said Gary Brotzel was my minor league coach, because I guess Gary was always name-dropping that.
Well, you know, I remember Ryan as a U 13 playing baseball. He was a catcher, and the story, they went to the Nationals, Prince Edward Island, and he set a record there for pickoffs as a catcher.
Wow.
Yeah, talk about this kid.
Must have been a rocket.
They're kind of like the McDonald's. They can do football, they can do hockey, they can do baseball.
They're athletic, those guys,
they can
as well
do it all.
The problem is, well, it's not a problem. The nice thing is that they did it at the international stage.
Right.
The Olympic medals and Grey Cups and Stanley Cups were just phenomenal.
Well, I was going to ask you, we were talking about the Red Sox in 2018. You know, we all have events that we go to where we get tickets or get to broadcast in our case, but we all have those big moments or events that we get to play in. And it doesn't even have to be at a professional level. It could be your midget hockey tournament that you played in or championship. Mm-hmm. And so for broadcasting, one of the coolest things that I ever got to do was when you and I did the 2018 playoff run for the Red Sox, and they made it all the way to the finals and faced Medicine Hat in a great 5-game series. I think game 4 that we did on the TV broadcast was definitely a lifetime highlight for me. But I think of a moment in the series before that, the Wayburn Red Wings, of course, the Wayburn Beavers were built to win now. That was going to be their year. And it was such a great way. I think of it as the awesome August, because everything just came together. And the series were best of 5. That's one thing I don't like about the league today, the best of 3s. The best of 5s, there's a lot more magic, and I hope they get back to that eventually. And so they dethroned the defending champion, Swift Current 57s in the first round. Second round, were down, I think they were down 2-1 against Wayburn. And there is a... old wives' tale that Wade Weinberger had been killing the Red Sox, and that one Jeff McDonald was sitting there looking at tape, and said, "I got it. Every time the ball's in the dirt, he's swinging."
Yeah,
and he was an out from there on in, and the Red Sox squeaked out an upset, winning games 4 and 5 to get to the finals.
Yeah, that's right. They controlled his bat, and that was a big part of the Weber's offense. And actually, the big part of that story is that, you know, I would drop in, of course. It was special for me because the boys had won the first two championships for the Red Sox in the league back in 11 and 12.
That's you wrote a book about loyal men.
That's right. Just to
find it on Amazon.
That's right.
Well, Loyal Men, I believe it's called. But anyway, it was great to see them together as coaches. And really to add spice to that story is I go into the coach's office after one game and the fridge is covered with stats and formulas and information. And Mitch and Jeff were spending one night there and going through rosters. And you're right, Jeff was analyzing tendencies so the pitchers could take advantage of certain batters, and it paid off in a big way. Yeah, Jeff, sort of in the background, gets a lot of credit for his analytical, prowess in guiding that team to that that final. And you talked about Medicine Hat. Boy, I remember, Pete, we were sitting there, game four. I was all fired up. It's in Regina. Must win, of course.
Mm-hmm. They fell behind early, too, in they that did. Game. We weren't sure.
Yeah. But then you brought in, I believe it was Bernie Eisworth.
That's right. Yeah.
You brought in Bernie.
For an inning.
Yeah. And yeah, which is great, because Bernie and I used to do the coverage.
Oh, the broadcast.
Yeah. Well, we were trying to give Leo a break.
Why is Bernie on the field? Okay, I understand now. Thank you.
We were trying to give Leo a break so he could stock up on Mad Jacks. But
here's the best part of that story, if you recall.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there, you know, Bernie's taking over, whatnot. So I'm watching the ball game, and the guys get a little rally going.
And it was a beginning.
It was a beginning.
Yeah.
So I told Breen, you're staying there because whatever we've done is working. Mm-hmm. A little karma, superstition, right? And they went on to win that game. And I remember talking to the boys. I've always said, Pete, that I talked to the guys. And, yep. And I said, you know, to win championships, the stars have to line up. There's no question. You need a bounce here. You need a save there. You need a hit, catch, whatever the case may be. So here we are. Here are the boys, the Red Sox. They're rolling through Swift. They roll through, they beat Weyburn. Now they're in game five back in Medicine Hat. I honestly thought after the first two innings, because they had to patch their pitching together.
Right.
It was in tatters.
They had two good starters, but they were just both out of, they were on fumes by the time they got to that fifth game.
They were.
Yeah.
In the first two innings, I thought, you know, they got all those innings fairly clean. They're in the ball game. You never know.
Yeah.
Just as you say, though, they fell short. The pitching was just out of gas. Mm.
And that Medicine Hat team was awesome.
Oh, yeah. They were good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question. I remember, you know, we took pictures with the boys, my wife and I and Gene, on the field. It was tough to get a picture because they were so down and out.
Yeah, sure.
And Jeff said to me, and Dad, I really thought the stars were lining up. And I said, you know, kid, I thought so too. But what a great season. What a great rally. Great story. And again, another nice moment from sports, isn't it, Pete? You know, you talk about your son and the weight powerlifting.
Yeah, and
throw that in there.
Well, there's a saying that the sometimes the, how does it go? The coming up was worth the falling down. I think that's kind of what it felt like at the
exactly.
End of
that, there's so much to competing, right? Mm-hmm. Here's a story. We're fond of the story and so many nice side stories to it. They didn't win the championship.
Right.
But boy, I tell you, I'm sure they'd go through it all again because there's many pauses out of that.
And it's when you're competing, you're not thinking about it this way, but really at the end of the day, it's not just about the hardware. It's about the journey. And that journey was pretty spectacular when you think about how it all came together. Well, listen, that professional level dedication for the not professional level paycheck that the boys were putting in when Jeff figured that out about Wade Weinberger's tendencies, that comes from you, my friend. So that was a big reason why they... the Red Sox made it as far as they did that year.
And again, it was so much fun for the family to see the boys succeed. Mm-hmm. And you know me, I love the baseball. I love watching what's going on all the time. And to be involved is just special for me, too.
Leo mentioned my son's powerlifting exploits. I'll say real quickly. He finished fifth in Western Canada at a meet in Moose Jaw this past weekend. He did not get that from me.
Oh, no, definitely not. He did not. Jake did not get his athletic.
I spent some time in the gym, but nothing like what he does.
Man, toss that weight around. Good for him.
Before we go, the golf show.
Yes. Hey, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Birdies and bogeys are so pumped about this. We're going to our third season. We're going to open this season up with an episode out of Melbourne, Australia.
Nice.
We shot an episode in Melbourne. St. Andrews, ironically.
Were you visiting Jeff?
I was visiting Jeff,
Okay.
Jeff was down there playing baseball and coaching, et cetera, and married, expecting his first in June. So,
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that episode.
Well, it's cool because you can actually compare like an all-world course to what we have in Saskatchewan.
Oh, exactly. Yeah and they'll be part of the show.
Good. Awesome. Yeah. Can't wait to see it. I know the great Ernie Afaganis, who was on CBC for Sports for a long, long time, he said the coolest thing he ever did was they had a show, I think it was called Tee to Green for a while.
Was that Par 27? Was that the one?
I don't know. But he said people to this day, like it's been off the air for like 40 years, and to this day, people ask him about it everywhere, anything else. I think that's probably true about birdies and bogeys. Thanks again for coming in. This has been great. We'll do this again soon.
So much fun. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Love
it. Okay. That is our good pal Leo McDonald joining us here on the Sports Cage. Still ahead here in Hour 3, we will check in with the great Jeff Currier. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of the program. program for affordable trailer sales on Rider Radio, 620 CKRM.
Saskatchewan's best coverage of the Saskatchewan Roughriders is on the Sports Cage, right here on the mighty 620 CKRM.
Still ahead this week on the Sports Cage, Barney Shinkruk will be in with the Thursday edition, and then on Friday we'll have Mike McEwen, the skip from Team Saskatchewan, after the dust has settled from the briar that was. And we will be down at the Brandt Center before the game. Live, we will have some guests from the Regina Pats before their game that evening as well. Right now, it's time for Where Are They Now? For Floor Coverings International. For new floors, choose one of the highest rated companies in the country. Floor Coverings International, the stars of flooring. Visit FCIfloors.com today. Brendan McGuire and Pete Pascoe, very pleased to be joined by the longtime broadcaster on this radio station for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Jeff Currier joins us on the line. Jeff, have you thought about when the last time you appeared on this radio station was?
It's been a while, Brendan. It's great to hear your voice, by the way. And you and Pete, all the best to both of you and everybody in Riderville and all over Saskatchewan. It's nice to be able to connect again, but it's been some number of years for sure.
The look around Riderville is a little different from when you were still broadcasting the games. The stadium's different. I thought you made a good point when they brought you out for that last season, and you made some comment. It was something to the effect of, it was never Mosaic to me. It's almost like we forget it was Taylor Field. That's when it was in its legendary status.
Always Taylor Field to me, and I guess, yeah, obviously it's Mosaic, and it's a palace now that the Rough Riders play, and it, so much is different, I think, Brendan, from when I was doing the games. The Riders changed the way they did business. The whole business model changed, and people like me, like the wonderful Jim Hobson, who we all love so much, really did so much to help turn the team around financially and on the field, and it became not just kind of the little team that could. It became a model of efficiency and excellence.
Jeff, can you update the folks? As mentioned, it's been a couple of years since you've been around here. We've established that you moved on to Winnipeg and CJOB, but what exactly did you do while you were there?
Well, I moved here to take on the role of their version of the Sports Cage, which was Primetime Sports at the time, and I did that for several years, and also helped out on Winnipeg Blue Bomber broadcast. Of course, we had, I think the best guy in the CFL was a play-by-play guy, and the legendary Bob Irving. So I was doing the talk show, and in 2001, I had an opportunity to move out of sports and into news talk. And at that time, I just felt personally just felt kind of ready for a change, that as much as I loved all my years doing sports, because I'd done it for about 20 years at that point, I was starting to feel the urge to live in a larger world. And of course, all my friends in the sports business thought I'd lost my mind. Like, why would you want to leave the toy department, kind of thing? But I moved into a news talk role and hosted a number of different shows on CGLB over the next 20 years or so, and retired about 2.5 years ago.
You know, for people who knew you when you worked here, that may not be an entirely surprising transition, because you're one of the few sports guys that didn't just talk about sports, didn't just have an interest in sports. You were well beyond that. And this is my long-winded way of paying you a compliment, but you had a lot of interest outside of the balls and strikes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Brendan. I think I was always, of course, interested, for example, in the technique required to throw a good two-seam fastball, but I was perhaps more interested or intrigued in the idea that what was it for a guy like Michael Jordan, who was cut by his high school basketball team, to go on and make himself the greatest player ever? What was it about that guy? What is it inside these people who achieve a level of excellence that the rest of us don't achieve? Look at a guy like Donald Narcisse, who I know you probably all know was just inducted into his Texas Football Hall of Fame,
mm-hmm.
and went on to become the CFL's all-time leading receiver. And I was blessed enough to call almost every one of Narco's catches. He played, I think, a couple of years after I left as well. But most of his career, I had a chance to follow him. Now, this is a guy with really modest physical gifts. You know, Don Narcisse was not the most gifted natural athlete you'd ever see, far from it. And yet, he made himself into the CFL's all-time leading receiver. What do these people have that the rest of us don't have? And that's kind of what intrigued me about being around athletes who achieve at such a high level. I always enjoyed being around people like that.
What makes them tick? There's just something different about them, and sometimes getting to the bottom of that is easier said than done. I know at an early age when I was getting into broadcasting, one bit of advice that you gave me was not to get too wrapped up in how the team you are covering performs, like wins and losses. And the message that I got through that was that if you are describing the action through rose-colored glasses or a certain colored glasses, you're not only cheating the listener, but you're cheating yourself. And I learned that over the years, I tried to stay on that keel. And I learned that I actually enjoyed the event for what the event was. Yeah, if I covered a team that, I don't know, let's say lost 7-2 and was just eliminated from the playoffs, well, I'm enjoying the story of the fans being disappointed. What's going to happen next? And I learned to just enjoy the story. You don't see as much of that anymore with sports broadcasters, do you?
No, less and less so, I think, Brendan. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that in so many sports, the broadcasters are employees of the team,
right?
Rather than a big broadcast outlet. Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, National Football League, all the radio guys all work for the team. So, but I always thought it's our job to paint the picture, to tell the story. And I remember that, you know, the great Vin Scully once said, "I tried to care as little as possible who won." And that was, I think, good advice for any young broadcaster. I think it's a view that's not commonly held anymore. But the idea is to serve the story, to tell the story, to paint it as it is, and to be the eyes and ears of the people who are not there and not watching it. I'm talking radio specifically, of course, but to tell that story as plainly and I don't want to say dispassionately, because you have to have a passion for what you're doing, but to not get so emotionally caught up in the wins and losses that it affects your performance. I always thought that, and people say, doesn't it bother you if they lose? I said, but my biggest wish is that the game is still close in the fourth quarter, so people are still listening. Your job is to keep an audience as a radio guy. And if the team is not playing well, I always thought, if you sound like you want to get up and leave halfway through the third quarter, that's probably what your audience is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I seriously doubt you'll remember this, but you made a great impression on a young, well, much younger, Pete Pasco back in the day. I remember the Riders were struggling one year. It was the mid-90s, so that was fairly regular.
Connor.
Yeah. And I popped into your office in the sports department. I said, "Hey, Jeff, must be tough, you know." And you looked at me and you said, "Yeah, you know, I mean, when they're good people, you don't want them to struggle. That makes you a terrible person, but the stories are much more interesting when they do struggle." And that sort of impacted me in a way that, yeah, don't be a fan when you're a journalist. Be one or the other.
Yeah, you know, I remember being at a gathering of colleagues, you know, who were covering the league, a lot of broadcasters, and I shot my mouth off, as is so often the case with me, and I said, if you care who wins, you should not be in the press box. And they all looked at me like I had two heads. And I thought, oh, well, I guess I'm swimming upstream here on this one.
Wrong audience, wrong crowd. Yeah,
I guess so. But, over the years, I got to know, and, you know, covering the CFL, you get to know people on all the teams. And in those days, it was a much more of a kind of a familial sort of environment in those days. And you got to know players and coaches on the other teams, and it wasn't quite as adversarial as it is today between the media and the teams. We had much greater access to players and coaches in those days. So it was a different environment. And so you get to know and get to like people around the league. And so I was always happy. Whoever won, there were always some people I was happy for.
You covered the Rough Riders in an era that was probably the most interesting, at least for road trips. I don't know if you got to do any trips to Montreal, so if you missed out on that, I'm sure that would have been a loss. But you got many. Yeah, but you got to travel around the United States during the American expansion era, and I always tell people that those 3 years were probably the three best years of my life as a sports fan, because the league was just so fascinating. All these new teams were popping up. I know not everybody viewed it that way or remembers it that way. Of all of the road trips that you got to make down south, are there any that pop out more than the other?
You know, we didn't get to San Antonio, but I did do a couple in Sacramento. We went to Las Vegas, where Anthony Calvillo was the starting quarterback as a 20-year-old. Memphis, Birmingham. Birmingham was memorable for me because the head coach of that team was legendary former Rams linebacker and Bears head coach Jack Pardee.
Right.
And it was you know, what an honor to meet him. And then we go to Shreveport, and Forrest Gregg, who was part of Vince Lombardi's dynasty, was their head coach. And going to Baltimore was an interesting one because it was kind of the old stadium where the old Colts had played. Walking out of the tunnel where Johnny Unitas had walked out was pretty cool. But here's a funny story that you might like. We're doing the pregame show. We're getting set. We hadn't started our pregame show yet, but we're setting all our stuff up in the press box. And my color guy, the wonderful Carm Cartieri, who, by the way, should be in the CFL Hall of Fame in the reporters division, but isn't. But
I agree.
We're looking down in the field, and he was looking down, and he said, "Something's not right about that field." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Those yard markers don't look right to me." He said, "They don't look 36 inches apart." So how can you tell? So he went down to field level, and Ray Yock was the head coach at the time of the Rough Riders. So this would be, what, 94, I guess.
I think it was 95 when you guys went down to Baltimore.
95. And I looked down, and there's Carm and Ray pacing off these yard markers. and they concluded, they didn't have a yardstick with them, but they concluded that these yard markers were, in fact, only about 34 inches apart. You know, but like 34, 35 inches. But they were less than a full yard apart because the stadium wouldn't have accommodated a full CFL field, and so they kind of cooked the books a little bit there.
Well, since some have joked that Damon Allen, he's the all-time passing leader, that some of his yards in Memphis shouldn't really count as full yards because I guess they doctored the yardsticks in that park too. But I guess that was a staple of the CFL in the 90s with the American expansion.
We did one game down there, and it was a dreadful football game.
Right.
And then the Mad Dogs came back up to Regina later that year and played their game. And they lost because their kicker missed like a 25-yard field goal on the last play of the game. It was another bad game. And their coach was a guy named Pepper Rogers. He's just one of those good old boys. And I saw him down in the parking lot after the game, and they were getting ready to get on their team bus. And they, you know, "Coach, nice to meet you this year, and I hope we see you again next year." But we didn't, of course. But he said, "You know, I coached in the Rose Bowl. I coached in the Orange Bowl. Coached against all them big schools. I've never been called the things I was called here today." It was just crestfallen, this poor guy. I guess the fans were giving it to him something terrible.
Well, you know what? A bigger compliment I can't think of the East Side fans ever getting than that right there. Somebody who had coached in all the big American schools and had never been railed on like he was that day. But I'll before we go, Jeff, I'll just give you a line that I thought was really prudent. We had Jeff Hamilton on from the Winnipeg Free Press. Was it last week or the week before? To talk about the worries about the Jets and their attendance. Yeah. And I read a quote that you gave, and I may be paraphrasing, but you said this about the CFL. You said the CFL will be in a better place when they realize that begging is not marketing. And we thought that was really prudent. I'm not saying the Winnipeg Jets are begging, but I think that's a valuable lesson for the Winnipeg Jets today if they want to get their attendance issues straightened around. So, Jeff,
they're not begging, but they're getting close to it.
They're clearing their throat, getting ready to beg and get down on their knees to beg. But so there you go. You solved the Winnipeg Jets attendance issues even 20-some years before they came back up. This has been great, Jeff. Never enough time, and I really hope we get to do this again soon.
Anytime, guys. Great to hear both your voices and to reconnect with you guys. And just a big hi to everybody in Regina, where I enjoyed the happiest years of my career.
Very well said. Nice. That's nice to hear. And I know a lot of our listeners enjoyed some of the happiest years of their listening, covering the Rough Riders. And I even know for myself, there's just something great about sound that I don't think will ever leave. And I've even told Carm Cartieri this many times. I would hear him and even the other broadcasters doing the games in more recent
this
years.
This was the era before every game was on television, so radio really mattered.
Yeah. But and to me, it's still that, like, if I watch a whole bunch of games on TV, then I'll put it on radio. Even last year, I listened to the broadcasts sitting in the press box with a transistor radio, and everybody would laugh at me. Yeah. But it was the only way I could get a live feed. Mm-hmm. And there's just something great about sound, and sometimes just letting the sound tell the story rather than having to use my eyes, too. And pay attention to what was happening. Where Are They Now is for Floor Coverings International. Need new floors? Get the stars of flooring. Floor Coverings International, locally owned, mobile flooring showrooms, thousands of choices. FCIfloors.com. We'll be back to wrap next. You're listening to The Sports Cage on Rider Radio 620 CKRM.
The Sports Cage is your locker room pass. We're talking Riders on Saskatchewan Sports Radio, 620 CKRM.
Oh, that was really nice, our visit with Jeff Currier. That really made my day. That was good.
I missed that voice. That was a nice flashback for me. I enjoyed that.
And the calm rationale about everything.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, he never seemed overly perturbed about anything. But if he was, give him some room, because it was going to get explosive.
Well, and he had his own standards. I don't think he really cared too much about what people on message boards would say. We wouldn't have had message boards back then. I guess we would have had more people calling in once a week and after the games, and we would have had in the newspaper letters to the editor.
Oh, right. Imagine. Remember that. Yeah, no, Jeff never spent a lot of time worrying about what folks were saying. Of course, he was interested in what fans were saying, because that inevitably worked its way into a broadcast in some way, shape, or form. But if you called in and said, "Courier, I hate your broadcast. You're the worst," he'd just basically say, "Cool, talk to you next week, because you'll be listening."
Well, and you just wouldn't get too worked up about it. And I think too many, even when I've talked to enough broadcasters today who get sick to their stomach by what people are saying online. And I learned a long time ago to not pay attention to that, because
better not.
There is so much garbage online that it's hard to really sift through what's what. Speaking of interacting through social media, follow us on Twitter or X at Sports Cage or on Facebook as well. We're going to have a special Regina Pats edition of the program coming up on Friday when we are down at the Brandt Center. Cool. And that'll be a good time. I guess we're going to check in with Dennis Sobchuk.
Nice.
Talk about the 74 Pats. We're going to have the head coach on, Brad Haroff. I'll be curious to hear about their plans heading into the off season, because at some point you have to, what is the saying? The old Chicago Cubs fan saying with Harry Carey, there comes a point when you have to start thinking about next year, because this year just ain't going to be. And so, since we are approaching the end of the season, I think that will be good to have an opportunity to do that. I just wanted to go out to the text line. Somebody wanted us to give a plug for the...
Oh, right, the Regina Rebels.
Yes.
I can help you with that.
Yeah, Trevor in Regina. Hoping you guys could give a shout out to the hockey players in the high school hockey league. This is a very good hockey league that doesn't always get enough credit. It is very good hockey. Tomorrow, the city finals take place. The 4A final has Campbell going up against O'Neill. O'Neill is the two-time back-to-back defending champions. I have been told in the school's history, they've never won the championship 3 years in a row. Hmm. The 3A championship is between Luther and Belfer tomorrow as well.
Nice.
And also, what else do we have? JB and Belgoni.
There we go.
Wants us to express and share the upcoming run for the under 18 AAA Regina Rebels.
Mm-hmm.
The girls team, they are going against the Battleford Sharks, and that is at C6 in the Cooperator Center on Friday night, 7 o'clock.
Game one of a semifinal series. The Rebels dominated that league this year, so if they don't make the final, they will.
That would be a big disappointment.
Yeah.
So I really do love the local sports stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When we go through, Barney does such a good job of that with mm-hmm. the senior hockey, mm-hmm. and you do a good job with Locker Talk.
Sure, thank you.
On Access Now Sports, and if there's anything that
just
we've
about
learned,
dare, actually.
Well, we've been doing this for literally decades, both of us,
yeah.
and we realize that what makes this program go and what makes media go mm-hmm. is not covering what national media is doing. It's covering other things.
Yeah.
And that's why the Rough Riders are so important in the mm-hmm. CFL here, but you can get some of that stuff nationally. And that's why it's critical that we talk about some of that other stuff and have the SJHL report, et cetera, et cetera.
But we're not just a one sport town. No, sir.
No. And I'm excited to talk to Mike McEwen on Friday.
That'll be cool. I wonder,
just let it breathe a little
things.
Bit,
yeah.
you know, after the Briar. And
I just want him to say, we'll be back.
Yeah, me too. And everybody says that that's kind of the line they're taking, but I haven't heard that from him.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to hear that directly from him.
Yes, please.
And I'm just curious to see where they can go with this, because I don't know that any team ever won a championship just being thrown together.
I don't know.
As much as that one has been with a new skip. I know Gushue has had to make adjustments, mm-hmm. but it took them so many years to get it together. So if they could do it this well in week one or in year one, it makes yep. you wonder what they could do if they stick together for like 3 to 5 years.
Ooh, hope we get to find out. I really, really do, because that's an exciting team. And there are some others in Saskatchewan. It's not just the Mike McEwen show, but they were pretty good this year.
They're going to be hard to beat in Provincial Tankard next year and the year after if they stick together.
Yep.
Okay, that's a wrap. And that is the Wednesday edition of the Sports Cage. A big thank you to all of our guests. And this is Brennan McGuire saying we'll talk to you again soon.